Welcome to the September 22nd meeting of the Expanded Budget Committee. And before I begin, we have one department head here, two department heads here. And I will repeat this announcement as others come in. We have you all scheduled on a 15-20 minute schedule. And the first two assigned counsel is 15, planning is 20. And I'm going to make every effort, and I would hope that you might be able to stay within that time frame. And I will say this to you, that department heads, we have been running long, and frankly, it hasn't been the department heads who've made us run long. So, but, you know, if you look at the numbers, then hopefully we can stay within that framework. Kevin McGuire, is there anything you'd like to say about the papers that you've distributed this evening?
Yeah, I just wanted to provide a brief guide to the most recent layer of pile on your desks. We've made another revision of the legislature contact sheet. It was two phone numbers and an email this time. We'll hope that we've got it all right at this point. You'll find a pile of canary yellow correction pages or replacement pages. The primary issue with these that we're addressing with these was that same thing that Martha caught about the consolidated pages was affecting some of the FTE sheets. You may remember that there were a couple that were off. So those corrections are in the yellow stack. The brightly colored graph is one of the responses to legislative requests from our last session. It was the one that I brought to you in hard copy, and it should be there too. And of course, you have your pile of handouts for tonight. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. First up, assigned counsel, and Lance and Julie are here, and welcome to the desk.
Good afternoon, everyone. You'll see our budget request for 2017 is reflective of the environment, very changing environment we're going to be operating in, that has both a number of challenges and a number of opportunities we're going to be looking at going forward. The major influences we'll be dealing with going forward are the ongoing heroin opioid issues, epidemic that we're facing. We're seeing increased costs both through our client caseload and a dramatic increase in costs in our treatment courts that are, especially family treatment court, that are actively addressing that and are seeing increases in their caseload. The other major issues are the mandated change in the eligibility guideline that will increase the eligibility guideline to 250% of the federal poverty guideline. That'll kick in April 1st, 2017 for us. It kicks in for the five rural Herring counties October 1st, but the state agreed to move that back to April 1st for the rest of us to allow for budgeting processes. That's a state mandate that we have no control over. They're requiring us to adjust to that. We estimate that's going to increase our caseload by a minimum of 300 to 400 cases. That's based on a review of we went back and looked at the applications we denied in the past for financial reasons, and between 300 and 400 of the people we denied will be eligible under the new guideline, so we're anticipating that in 2017. And we're also the other influences ongoing for us are the regionalization process that creates some challenges, but also some opportunities I'll discuss in a second, and the ongoing after-hours arraignment process on that. So you'll see what we're, in terms of the net local costs, what we're requesting is basically a $100,000 increase. It's a 6.22% increase. That's mainly reflective of the increased costs we're expecting due to the guideline changes, along with ongoing costs that we can anticipate with client caseload on that. And then you see our full-time equivalents. The change there is we're seeking, and that's reflective of our current staff, plus we're requesting the addition, you'll see in our OTR, of an additional 20-hour per week administrative assistant. We require that addition due to the increased caseload we're going to be facing. With an additional 300 to 400 cases per year, that's beyond the capacity of our existing staff to handle. Yet they just can't handle that increase in workload. The good news in that, you'll see in the OTR, is what we've been able to do because of the regionalization process, working with oils, we've been able to have the state capture that cost for us. You'll see what we've done. They've agreed through it's an approved grant. They're going to cover the cost of that 20 hours, so that essentially what we've been able to do is they've created an additional mandate for us, and we in turn we've got creative Julia working with the staff. We've been able to create a situation where they're going to pay for it. In return, what we're doing is our grants person is going to be assisting the Schuyler County PD's office with managing their oils grants. That's a real weakness. That was a real desire on the part of oils, the Office of Indigent Legal Services. We're a little unique in that we have capability and capacity, technical or administrative capacity. Most small counties, their public defender offices or assigned counsel programs, they have no one. They have lawyers who have no real background in grant administration, and it's a severe issue for oils in these counties. So we've been able to, in return for providing some assistance there, they're going to cover their grants will basically enable us to cover our increased administrative costs.
Questions? Martha had your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks, Lance. Hi, Julia.
Hi.
Based on the news, we might know some new people who need a good lawyer today.
Fortunately for us, I think they're over the guidelines.
They're probably over the guidelines. Yeah. Are these state grants ongoing? Do we expect that's going to, remain?
What we're being told is, in terms of we get a number of grants through oils, and the expectation is, what we're being told is, these grants are in place, the ones we have. They're guaranteed, approved by the comptroller. Of course, there's some uncertainty there with Fahy DeFrancisco and what will happen in terms of state funding. But what we're told is, we know oil's preference is to continue, assuming the state takes over and it's uncertain, they still want to have, or seem to want to have, some of that money coming in the form of grants, because it gives them control over spending how it's spent. So we have this. I mean, there's no guarantee, you know, 3 years down the line they'll cover this. But I can tell you with the regionalization process, Oils is really looking at pushing the idea of regionalization. Tompkins County is seen as the model for kind of medium, smaller counties, while Erie is the model for very large counties. So we've had a lot of discussions with them. They express a lot of interest in us having us do more of this, and we've been kind of we need to, you know, develop what we've taken on. You know, we're wary of expanding too quickly. And this is the first step. I mean, they're very supportive of this type of activity. You know, there's no guarantees, but based on our conversations, I think they would like to see us, frankly, do more of this. And, you know, we're somewhat open to that, particularly if they're going to capture the costs and helps us capture some of our costs. I mean, to me, the kind of win-win here was, number one, we had increased needs, and they're going to pay for it because they created those costs. And in return, they get a benefit as well.
And the Fahey DeFrancisco, that's the 7-year takeover of assigned council costs. We heard some updates at NYSAC this week. Do you have any update on what's expected with the governor signing or not?
The latest I've heard is it's at the executive. In that the New York Senate kind of controls the process because they're the first body that passed it. There are negotiations going on. My understanding is there are some concerns over control of budgets. The state has some concerns over that. So there would probably be some fine-tuning, should we say, of the bill. I've heard it may be December. I mean, they have effectively till, what, Christmas, I think, to sign it. It could be as late as December before they work that out. So no one really knows. I think it passed both houses unanimously. I think there's a lot of pressure on the executive. But, I mean, that's kind of the latest I can give you.
Anyone else have any questions? Will?
Hi, Lance.
Hi.
Can you remind us how things ended up with this increased eligibility, 250% of the poverty line? At one point, we were hearing concerns that, for example, there may be people, we may be called upon to serve, say, Cornell students who were temporarily, you know, by
right.
Condition.
It this came about precedes me back starting back in 2015. My understanding is, and I think this all kind of grew out of the Hurl-Herring settlement. Mm-hmm. One of the issues was the state would develop and review the guidelines and set guidelines, because at this point every county has a different guideline they use in terms to define eligibility. And they had a number of public hearings. They did a lot of research, interviewed a lot, you know, all of the parties, and came up with the 250% guideline as the most appropriate. The state's thinking there is what they looked at what the guarantees are, and what they've said is that what this means is that, right to the lawyers, you don't have to be absolutely impoverished, but you have to be effectively unable to provide for representation, is how they got to that 250% mark. For a lot of situations, particularly family court and so forth, you're simply, even if you're a lower income employed person, you're still not going to be effectively able to come up with you know, $5,000-$6,000 for an attorney to go out and retain. So that's one of the factors they looked at. You know, one of our concerns, and we're still working on these issues or discussing it with them, are the issues of what they're also saying is you don't look at other family income. Yeah, which makes some sense from their perspective. For instance, in a family court situation, if you have two parties involved in a custody battle, and one person makes $60,000 a year, the other one makes $30,000, where you can't really, in looking deciding whether the person who makes $30,000 is eligible for an attorney, you can't really look at that $60,000 income because that party is probably not willing to contribute to fund the other side in any kind of litigation. And that's what they made these types of decisions. There is one of our concerns is of course that concern of the Cornell student who comes in and a lot of them will still probably go private, but for minor offenses, they may be coming to us. And our concern, of course, is if you have an upper middle class or middle class individual, whose family can afford an attorney, they're coming into us. We're looking at that. There are ways we're going to try to review that in terms of their accounts and funding. We do that already. We ask to see their bank accounts so that if you're a freshman at Cornell and your bank accounts are showing that money flowing through from the family, our position is we may get to count that. So that may help us defeat that, but that's still, frankly, a little in flux.
Thank you.
Mike.
So you guys, you'll get ordered to take like a custody case in like that?
Yeah, we can. I mean, we get oftentimes there are kind of two types of custody cases. One is where you may have two individuals coming in fighting themselves, or you could have where DSS is seeking to remove children so both parents have to be represented. And someone's always entitled to come to us if it's a custody matter, and if they qualify, be assigned. And so that eligibility guideline is there. And one of the reasons, and this is how OILS has explained to us, the process they went through and kind of setting that, the limits on what to consider, is that they were looking at these types of situations where they didn't feel it was appropriate to look at the income outside the individual. So we're barred in some situations from considering that. I mean, in the mandate. So there's been a lot of discussion among chief defenders who have to implement this, and there's a variety of opinions and concerns. So we're trying to get some of these issues fine-tuned, but we're, the mandate that comes to us is the one that we have to deal with in terms of that.
Something that Lance hasn't talked about, because I haven't mentioned it to him, is that we are the oldest, on average, department in the county by age. So we are thinking of succession plans and working that, and the person hopefully with the added position that we're getting, that hopefully that can be someone who can be trained to assign cases, since there's only one person usually in the county that does that, and she's going to retire. And so that is something that we are working on, and that is very important to especially a small department like us.
Good enough. Thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Planning Department is next. Ed and everyone from Planning is here.
Good evening. Start out here. First of all, our budget overall is increasing by 0.39%. In the administrator's overall budget, you'll know that fringe and salary overall are up 1.3%. That makes up 90% of our departmental budget. So we're actually reducing some other areas. And our budget is up less than half of the overall local share budget, which is up 0.9%. So we're not asking for too much. Full-time equivalents, the change reflects making a part-time person full-time to provide some additional administrative support, primarily to the tourism program, but also a little bit to planning. Major influences. Things that we've been working on that are not going away, unfortunately. Accelerating impacts of climate change. Seems that the urgency is greater than ever. What we're seeing globally is temperatures are outpacing projections from a few years ago, which were bad enough. And now there's scientific communities talking about potential tipping points in the next 15 to 20 years, that changes that could be put into place that will be very difficult to reverse if we don't take action in the near term. Obviously, we can't do it all at Tompkins County, but we've always taken a position of trying to do our share and provide leadership where we can. Certainly, on the other side, with these, the increasing probability of major impacts, we know that those impacts could include increased flooding. We've seen and drought, and actually both those things can happen in the same year. It doesn't have to work otherwise, unfortunately. We also know that this will have effect on the natural world. Species, both plant and animal, will have to be able to migrate in response to climate change. Some of the things we're doing, we hope, will help to address that a little bit. On the energy side, the Energy and Economic Development Task Force, as you know, completed the report with recommendations in June, so we're trying to respond to those. Housing needs assessment, which is coming close to completion, moving into housing strategies, shows a continued stress on lower and middle income families and households in the community, and it's something we've put a fair amount of effort into, and we're going to be putting even more in the coming year. The whole issue of balancing development and conservation, you know, a lot of people in the community not sure about growth, you know, how do you do it and accommodate it? That's a large part of what we try to do in looking at ways to plan for development, appropriate development, while also conserving those resources people are most concerned about. And then in our tourism program, there's a lot of exciting opportunities on the horizon, everything from Heritage Education Center, Conference Center, some of the agritourism efforts that are underway, and outdoor recreation efforts, including the Blue Way Trail, where new improvements are going to be made in the coming year, and that will actually be signed all the way around Cayuga Lake to create a real water trail, as well as our work with local communities on trail development for other multiple purpose trail users. Continuing priorities, things we've been working on that will continue to be focuses. Of course, housing, as I've already mentioned. We administer the Community Housing Development Fund. We provide funding to INHS for the home ownership program, among those major efforts there. And, of course, the update of the housing strategy will continue into 2017. Focused development, we work on a number of projects, including just completing a feasibility study for relocating the DOT facility to allow a key city property to be opened up for mixed-use development. As I mentioned, tourism, that runs the gamut, and I'm not going to get into all that tonight, but there are a number of strategies and plans that have been recently completed that offer a lot of opportunity for economic development and community development in the coming years. Trail development, well, you might recognize some people in some of these pictures. Trail development, we're on the verge of the formal opening of the Black Diamond Trail in the town of Ithaca and Ulysses in the city of Ithaca, and we're working with state parks on the next phases on that, planning to hopefully be able to continue that development in the future, as well as with local municipalities on some of the projects that they're working on, town of Ithaca, Dryden, and some other communities as well. Agriculture and natural feature conservation, like I said, the flip side of development is conserving those things that we value and need for the future. We have a current application in for another farmland protection grant. Continue to work with local farmers that are interested in that program. And our stream corridor and flood mitigation program is really critical for preparing the community for what might be impacts of climate change. Energy and climate, as you've just heard recently, we completed the inventory, and now we'll be moving forward into the update of the energy strategy. We continue to work with community partners on a number of different energy-related projects, including the Heat Smart project, which will be continuing. In terms of new initiatives, in the capital program, I think you've already heard a bit about it, but the natural infrastructure program is, again, one that deals directly with a response to long-term climate change threats, particularly increased flood risk from intensified rainfall events. So this program will look to protect and better manage floodplains, as well as watersheds that can retain water and slow it down before it reaches places where it can do a lot of damage. We're also, in that same mode, looking at initiating in probably later this year, but mostly in 2017, a disaster recovery plan. We'll be working with Lee on that. That's the kind of final component to the total preparedness plan recommended by the federal government. We've done the mitigation plans, preparedness plans. Recovery planning is, what if you're hit with a disaster, how do you bounce back from it quickly? And there's a lot of things you can do in advance to prepare yourself to do that, and they found the communities that do recover much more quickly than communities that have to figure it all out after the fact. So we'll be working on that in the new year. Healthy community strategy, how to make our communities more livable and healthy for all ages and all people of all abilities will be an initiative in 2017. And then in the one thing that's not in the budget yet, but we'll talk about in a minute, is this recommendation from the Energy and Economic Development Task Force to create some kind of a program to provide energy assistance to businesses for economic development, to help them make their decisions in a way that's most energy efficient. So our OTRs, three that were approved, included by, in the administrator's budget. The first one is a continuation of approval last year you made for a three-year commitment to the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection. $50,000 for 3 years was approved last year, and it's included this year. The next one is the continuation of the Energy Fund that we've had for a few years now to continue to work with partners. The Energy Focus Area planning we're working on now will probably be where a lot of this funding goes. But there are other energy initiatives that we may be able to support working with our partners in the community as well. And the EMC has requested $2,000 for continued outreach as they update the unique natural areas inventory. The over-target request that was not able to be supported in the budget was to implement that Energy and Economic Development Task Force recommendation for what was called in their report an Energy Navigator assistance, providing direct assistance to people that are looking at renovating or building new buildings as part of their economic development and business expansion efforts. And it was identified as a need to have someone to help them understand what their options are, what resources are available, what paths they might go down or consider in the early stages of deciding on a project or making an investment. Now, what we are proposing, we understand that the budget didn't support $100,000 in new money, and we asked for target money because we thought this is something that should continue. But what we're proposing as an alternative is that the legislature put $50,000 into contingency next year, earmarked for this purpose, and we would, over the coming months, work with other community partners to raise the balance needed to develop a program. And we would like to propose a three-year pilot program, so it would involve $50,000 per year for 3 years, with the first one in contingency for 2017, that would allow us to prove the value of this. And we think we can get community partners to match that at least, in order to come up with a full program. We need a little more time to fully explore those opportunities and come back with you a firm proposal to use that $50,000, and that's why we're suggesting that that could be earmarked in contingency, and then at the approval of the legislature in 2017, when we have a complete funding package and program for you to react to, that could be released and allow us to make that program a reality in 2017. So that's our budget.
Questions for Ed?
Before questions, Jim, can I just...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
...do one clarification? I think, Ed, that as a part of the package that you're proposing, one-time money would be... multi-year funding would be used, so you're not asking to increase the levy under this alternative.
Correct.
It's really to bring in one-time money three times.
Right.
$50,000 in each of the next 3 years.
To do a three-year pilot, and if it proves itself, then the legislature can decide, or we can develop permanent funding from other sources if that's available.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. I saw Dooley and Mike. Was there someone else on this side? Mike and Carol. Go ahead, Dooley.
I am a little surprised that you think the need for a navigator would go away after 3 years. Or that's the impression I got from your alternative.
Well, we asked for target money because we thought it wouldn't go away.
Yes.
But we understand that without there being room in the budget for that, this is a way we could get started. And if we do it as a three-year pilot, we hope it can prove its value so that there would be funding beyond that. But this is kind of a compromise.
Well, since the question of room in the budget had to do with the legislator's guideline to the county administrator, I can understand that he couldn't approve everything that he thought was a good idea. We've already seen a lot of those. But it doesn't mean that the legislature shouldn't also consider your original request, and I hope we will. I know, Mike, Jim, I know we're not supposed to make comments of that sort, but I needed to.
You're really good at reading minds, Julie.
Oh, this will just be a quick question. I'm sorry. I'm just wondering, did we ever set up a... So the money we put into this capital fund for climate change, did we ever set up the mechanism on how we decide, like, when something, like the Newfield flooding? Now, did we set up that mechanism of how you apply for that money and then how we actually give that out?
Are you talking about the new capital project, the natural? We have put together a preliminary description of how we would do that. We would obviously, if it's included in the budget, be coming back to the legislature with a process for allocating those funds.
Mike Lane.
Thinking about our airport region, and I know we looked at the microgrid and other things up there. We recently had a New York State grant application in. Sounds like most of the money went to Elmira and Rochester. But it doesn't mean that the projects up there aren't still good ideas. Is there room in your work plan to help the airport work on some of those things that they're planning, the transportation centers? Or I know you've been working on the relocation of DOT possibly up there. Is that something that you folks are going to be able to help with?
Well, we have worked with the airport. And we know the business industrial park feasibility study that's just been completed looks at development of a portion of airport-owned property for business and potentially the DOT and maybe some other types of organizations there. So we definitely intend to continue to work with the airport on that, continue to work with the airport on their energy plans for the new terminal, for the terminal renovation and for some of the other things they're doing. I'm on the Air Service Board, talk with Mike Hall regularly about these projects and work with them, and we offer whatever support they can as they offer support when we need them for something as well.
Thank you.
Carol.
I have three things. First has to do with the staff changes, the
I was trying to figure out how you got to the 0.44 when you've got a halftime change in the position. And it looks to me like what you've done is you've promoted the tourism planner but made him reduce his hours?
We didn't make anybody reduce their hours. That's the way the position was structured. So there are, yes, there's some adjustments in hours that were mutually agreeable. The position had been doing some work in planning and the planning side with funding from the planning department budget. And when the position changed, it really made sense for it to focus totally on tourism and be funded from the tourism budget at the hours agreed on. So, yeah, there's a little tweaking of a couple of hours there.
But you've raised the level of the position.
Right. That's correct.
Okay. I mean, that seems to me to be, I don't know, giving with one hand and taking with the other, unless he really is the staff member on board with.
Absolutely, because the staff member has outside activities that really take up that extra time anyway. And so even though we had budgeted for more time in the past, that wasn't always all used because of other things going on. So it was mutually agreeable.
Okay. I have mixed feelings about promoting people, but it's not really. Anyway,
so, Carol, please.
Number two.
No, ask the question. Okay.
Number two has to do with the OTR 57. So the Capital Reserve Fund for the Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection, is that in the capital budget or just the regular department budget?
It's a reserve account. It's one that can carry over from year to year if there's a balance, and that's the way it was originally established. So it's just an existing account that gets funding in the operational annual budget, and is because it's set up as a reserve account, that funding when there's a balance carries over. So it's a little different than some of the other things in the budget.
Are these resources assets of the county? I mean, basically.
What, the funding?
No, the areas that we're addressing.
Well, every project that we fund comes through the legislature for
assets.
Approval. So you get to approve anything that comes out of that account.
Would it be reasonable to think about putting that into the capital budget?
I don't.
Falls under the monetary threshold. I think it's $100,000 is kind of the normal standard for inclusion in the capital plan. So you get the benefits of the capital approach, where, as Ed has said, goes into accounts, it carries across fiscal years. So you get that benefit of a capital account. But, again, it doesn't meet the money threshold of $100,000, which is the capital number.
Okay. And then third is the navigator. So you've compromised both. You're talking about compromising both on the amount and on whether it be target?
Yes.
Can I elaborate on that, though? Because the idea is multiple parties that would contribute to the funding of this position. So the amount that the county would support for this position is less than what was requested. However, the idea is that there might be other partners who have an interest in this position as well, so the county wouldn't have to pay the whole thing. Some money might come from others. And with those other sources of funding, the full $100,000 a year would be achieved, just with less county dollars involved than would otherwise be the case.
So are the other sources you're thinking about, could they become ongoing sources, or are they the types of sources that only want to get something started and then...
Say maybe...
One or both, probably.
Be long-term.
With all that we've been through with the, the building up to this and stepping back and doing the extra task force, to compromise in both ways. So would those partners consider, if they would probably want to see the county do at least half of this, and if they then weren't going to continue,
Excuse me, Carol, but I think you're asking questions that cannot be answered.
here, because Ed is talking about putting out a proposal to other funders, and until the other funders are identified, you can't really answer. I don't want these people to answer a question that they don't have an answer to. Okay?
I understand.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely
okay.
makes sense. So the question then, I'll rephrase the question. Should we decide to commit to ongoing halftime position and ask these other funders to make it a full-time position and then evaluate whether we need it in the future? I mean, I don't know if I'm asking Joe or Ed. I'll ask Ed. Is that an alternative?
I'm thinking that outside funders would be more receptive to the idea of a pilot program than a permanent funding of a county position, at least to start out with.
Hannah, and then Martha.
Just a follow-up on one question that I asked yesterday we weren't able to cover. But I've spoken to you privately, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around what we're doing with respect to working our way towards supporting electric cars in Tompkins County. And you spoke about it eloquently to me, but I'm still trying to wrap my brain around what. So if you could just cover that.
Apparently wasn't that eloquent.
No. It's just that I've gotten so many moving parts from different people, so I wanted to come back to you full circle.
I think I'd actually like to ask Katie to give us a status report on the EV study that's going on.
Sure. So the ITCTC and the county planning are working together on a study. We have great consultants hired. We've got a best practices current status report done, and it's available. Happy to share it with whoever would like a copy of it. And right now we're looking at 90 sites that have been identified as potential charging station sites.
Awesome. In
Tompkins County. And trying to kind of sort through what the top ones might be so that they can do deeper analysis of those sites so they're kind of ready so that when grant opportunities come, we could actually jump on them.
And would you need any funding from Tompkins County, or are you looking exclusively for grant funding for those?
I think at this point we don't know enough. We probably just want to be ready for grant funding, as well as Joe's doing quite a bit trying to get us ready for EVs for the county.
Martha.
Yeah, thanks. On the Energy Navigator, we, as people here know, we talked about this at PDEC yesterday, and I think this is a good strategy. It's, you know, and it's not without having talked to those community partners. It's just not done yet. My question is about housing, and Megan McDonald's major focus is on housing, although she also works on energy. Ed, you spend a lot of time, and I'm sure others in your department too. I want to know if it's enough. I've thought of, you know, we kind of need the word bird dog comes to mind. Somebody who really has the time and, in a sense, the authority to really go out and try to make deals happen, to try to really be an advocate on the ground working on specific, to try to move specific projects along. Is that anything, do you believe you would need more staff, like to free Megan up to do only housing, or an additional person or half person, or how would you respond to that?
I think that'll depend a lot upon what we find out as we go through the process of updating the housing strategy and zero in on what we think is going to be the most effective actions that the community can take to address the housing problem. That could be something that could be an outcome of that, or we may find out that others in the community are better suited. I mean, we certainly have people at INHS and other places that are doing this full-time every day. So I think it's really a matter of seeing how that comes out and what directions we come up with as a community and what resources are required then to go forward from there.
But right now there's nothing.
Could we use somebody full-time? Probably, sure.
But right now there's nothing new in here about housing, right?
Nothing new. In the budget, we do have a little funding for some follow-on actions in 2017. We're anticipating that the strategy may need some additional funding. This year, we had funding to do the needs assessment. We don't have as much, but we have a little bit in, earmarked in other program expenses. So we do have a little bit of capacity, but not a lot. But there's some things we're looking at, like, you know, maybe doing an annual kind of check of vacancies in select properties might be something that would be very useful in reassuring the community that we're keeping the pulse of what's happening as we go forward with housing strategy, things like that.
Okay, but so in a sense, the finalization of the housing strategy and, you know, things that are happening this fall, the budget's going to move along, and unless, you know, we might not have a clear picture before the budget is done of kind of what we would need and what would be the best strategy or tool for housing, right? So
that's likely. I mean, yes, I mean, I can tell you staff in many cases are stretched trying to do multiple things that we have in the past, not recently, but in the not too distant past, had staff devoted totally to doing one thing. We don't have that luxury at the present time.
Okay, so there might be a reason to do the same thing with the contingent fund pending developing a plan.
If there's an opportunity to do that, that would be great.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you both very much, and Joan for coming out here.
Thank you.
Up next is emergency response.
Thank you, John.
Hi, Darren. Lee, I want to give you the same announcement that I gave to some of the other people. We've been having somewhat of a problem sticking to the time periods that we've assigned, and you're assigned 20 minutes, and I would, I would appreciate it very much if we could stay in that realm, and we will certainly have questions for you and all of that. So. And I'm not singling you out. I'm going to say that to everyone who appears. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, I'll move right along. The recommended budget numbers you've all seen and the details follow. Major influences that affect the request that is before you tonight, there are several. And there are things that you've all seen before over the last several years. It's truly a maintenance of effort budget, continuing on with the operations that we have, same staffing levels. We're in the midst of completing a number of large-scale grants that upgraded computer and radio technology over the last 2 years, and also is leading us into next-generation 911 initiatives, which I'll talk just briefly about in a few minutes. The budget also reflects the continuing investments in technology that have been made by this legislature over the last 10 years. Certainly we've added significant types of technology and equipment and infrastructure, and all of that needs to be maintained, and there is a requisite cost that comes with those investments. What we've attempted to do through our service contracts and work with other county systems is to leverage resources that we have, such as the county's GIS mapping system that works with our computer-aided dispatch, the CAD system. We're also expanding the use of mobile data terminals to all elements of public safety and not just the law enforcement community. Land mobile radio includes an extension on a regional basis so that we can link and talk with communication systems in adjacent counties and regions. Interoperability is a word that you will hear over and over when you talk to me, and that's not just the ability to talk by radio to each other. It also reflects in our ability to build systems where we can share data. Next generation 911 is an area of focus for all of public safety as we move to enable our facilities to be able to handle the newer smartphone-type technologies. You're seeing the public moving toward away from traditional landlines toward wireless devices, and those devices carry a lot of powerful information that we're not always able to process. This year, we're working to implement a text-to-911 solution so that those who need to text 911, be it for security reasons or what have you, or as an option for the hearing impaired, can do so. That requires changes within our systems. Our longer-term challenges really are not in the area of technology. You'll note that over the last couple of weeks, the Tompkins County Council of Governments created an EMS task force that our office will be supporting. And it's part of initiatives that we're working on within our coordination ranks to better improve the coordination of services and to begin to plan for how to provide public safety in areas where there is a significant challenge going on, particularly those departments that have been volunteer-based traditionally. I just, for a point of illustration, I've incorporated into this our strategic work plan that we're using as a guide within the department over the next few years. And you'll see a column, 2015. Those were items that were accomplished last year, upgrade of radio system consoles. We began a massive review of all of the emergency response plans that we work with. We implemented web-based technology for emergency management purposes, established the AED, Automatic External Defibrillator Program, that you funded 2 years ago through contingency funds. We also replaced the 911 phone system, logging recorders, and so on. In 2016, you see a list of about 16 items that the staff is working on. Mutual Link is an integration feature that the state has supplied us. Microwave point-to-point links our system to adjacent counties. TAC bases, this is tactical communications bases that allow us to talk on other radio frequencies than our 800 megahertz. IP Ethernet enables our microwave radio system to transport not just voice but data. It also will allow us to enhance our security out at the communication sites by being able to put cameras on and transport that back. Mobile data, I spoke about the planning activities that continue, as well as we're taking a look at the governance structures that we work with among the public safety agencies to allow us to better develop policies as to how we use the shared resources. Text to 911, ASAP. ASAP is Automatic Secure Alarm Protocol, which would allow us to receive technology and data from the alarm monitoring companies. Text-to-speech is a project that we're working on that enhances our paging system and allows an automatic paging to go out when our computer-aided dispatch creates an incident to be dispatched, converts the text to a voice, puts it out while a dispatcher is still on the phone with a caller, estimated to save us a minute and a half's worth of time with every dispatch. Spatial Station is a project that relates to our data systems, and again, we're looking at other improvements in our backup capabilities and continue work on accreditation. What this all does is converge. You see a large scale of projects, technological mostly in nature, that are converging together and moving us toward infrastructure and a foundation to better develop our tactical operations plans for the responders in the county. It also lays the foundation for us to be able to work with the next generation 911 technologies. And where we eventually expect to be is working on as part of a national network of communication systems for both voice and data through the national public safety broadband efforts that are out there. That's not something we're going to see in a year or 5 years. It's probably closer to 10 years. But what it will do is integrate all the public safety communications across the country. But it's going to be built upon the systems that are within each jurisdiction. I noticed today in the Ithaca Journal, and I clipped this out, an article that where Senator Schumer is advocating for technology to improve our security from cyber attacks in 911 centers. I'm not sure exactly what this means, but I can almost predict with a level of confidence that you will see the FCC create new standards and new requirements for the operations of these systems to deal with cybersecurity. And in this case, they're talking about the ability for hackers to get in and to overload your systems. What that says to me from a technical standpoint is that there will be technology developed that will have to be implemented within our phone systems and software to monitor these types of communications breaches and be able to manage and address those when they occur. So eventually that will mean I'll be back before you seeking funding to enhance our communications network, to add the modules, add the software and the interfaces that you need to implement these standards and technology requirements that the state and federal government will put upon us. That also means that we'll have to maintain those systems once they're there. Budget itself, to move all these initiatives forward and to maintain the operations, maintains the same level of staffing that we have today at 29.5 full-time equivalencies. That is, I think, within one of where we were 10 years ago. We've had some positions dissolved, others created. 2 years ago, we created a professional development coordinator that does the training for dispatchers and quality assurance. And last year, we did add an additional dispatch position for flexibility purposes in scheduling. Over target requests that were forwarded to you include three, two of which were recommended by the county administrator. One has to do with increasing the amount of money for service contracts for all of these systems. And I talked about how we need to support that software and hardware for all of the radio and telephone infrastructure that we have, as well as the software programs that we employ. That is an increase estimated next year for $62,000 plus. I will note that we've had the advantage over the last two budget years in 14 and 15 and 16, three budget years, where we were buying new systems or replacing old software and hardware. That gave us the flexibility to buy coverage on some of these service and maintenance contracts a year ahead of time or within the purchase. So we've had some flexibility, but now we need to restore the service contracts to the level that supports it. And the total service contract lines, I think, that we have requested is about $977,000. That's as opposed to 3 years ago when it was $959,000. So less than a 2% increase over a four-year span to maintain the technologies that we have. Second over-target request relates back to the automatic external defibrillator, AED, program that we instituted last year. And while we did place the money in to do the purchase and initial training, we did not place any money at that point in time into an ongoing maintenance. And we estimate, my initial request was for $12,000, which staff has suggested is going to be needed next year in order to do the two-year training and replace batteries and supplies in the AEDs. But it's once every 2 years we're going to see this. So what Joe and I thought about is that maybe it would be better to put an annual $6,000 amount and stagger how we do the purchases moving forward in order to meet that. And so it was recommended at half the request. I also had a third over-target request to restore funding, full-time funding, for my administrative assistance position. We have an incumbent in the position who has worked reduced hours for the last couple years as she's been moving toward retirement. And the employee has been with us for 45 years and has indicated that she's ready to fully retire. And I think I erred by reducing the dollars in thinking that we could compensate it for the less hours of this individual or this position being there. It is a struggle to manage, but we're getting there. Different people on the staff have been able to take on different parts of the job when the administrative assistant isn't there. But I've got a lot of institutional knowledge that will be gone next year, and I'm trying to think ahead to having an individual that can work very actively to help me and the program assistants administer the department. So that is the those are the highlights of the budget, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lee. Questions for Lee? Peter Stein.
I've been sitting here trying to figure out how to ask this question, but when you talk about a network that is going on, constantly getting better and more complicated and giving greater and greater services to the people who are part of it, I'm thinking, suppose a group doesn't want those greater services. Can they be part of the net and not have that? And to what extent is this thing like the Internet, where with the Internet I can write an email to everybody, but if I don't choose to keep up with Facebook, then that's my own problem, and I don't have to. So to what extent is this a very cast and concrete network that either you're in or you're out, and every change you make, they make, you make?
If your agency is going to be dispatched by the 911 center, you need to be a part of that network in order to have the radio communications. As far as the data system goes, there are some that can choose to be a part of it, and that functions almost like an intranet, where within the agencies that are participants, you have access to whatever records the dispatchers have access to and can use that information and access it without the intermediary and be able to better manage the incident. You can choose not to be a part of that, but the data that we're building that supports your agency is all within that network system.
Is it? For instance, in sort of when you have some kind of a police problem, does everybody get to hear all of the statements that are made? Has that become all public knowledge because it's going through this network?
If it's over the radio system, unless it's on scrambled channels, channels that are specific to specifically non-monitored outside of the system, it's there and it's public information. But as far as the arrest records or fire records that build off from that computer-aided dispatch, those are partitioned so that they belong to the particular agencies that are handling them, and then from there they take it and build their records management program. Some of that information is public, but much of it is agency specific and confidential in nature.
One more quick one. On this next generation business that seems to go on every time we hear you, we talk about next generation. We have no option. Is that correct? We pretty much have to do it. Is that right?
I think the evolving times are going to demand that we be able to provide that level of service. Your public today takes a picture and can, or streaming video, they can send that. There's an expectation that somebody can receive that and look at it. Same with the text to 911. A lot of people just plain text today. I don't see that happening. I think most people are going to have the wherewithal to dial a number and talk to a dispatcher. I truly hope they do, because that's the only way you can get the full description of what's going on. But there are times if somebody's in a particular situation and they're barricaded in the house and they don't want the other person to hear them calling 911, that is an option that they should be able to have in order to say, I have a problem and need help. And I think the times are going to drive us to that. And you're going to see that the national standards are going to expect that that's a service level we're able to provide across the country. There is some funding that's going to come with it from the state and federal level, but probably never enough to really underwrite the cost of what it takes to put that technology in place and maintain it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Loveland, and then Martha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lee, I have three quick questions for you and then a comment. Good to see you, by the way. Thank you very much for not just throwing the acronyms up there, but telling us what they mean as you go along. I really appreciated that. The communication system upgrade, what you're asking for in maintenance, is that internal or are you looking at the whole communication system that includes the other that are in the towns and all those other emergency vehicles?
What's in here are pieces of new contracts to mm-hmm. support software and programs. So there, for instance, the text-to-voice, mm-hmm. We're buying with a $169,000 grant. But to maintain that, there will be a service contract at $12,000 a year. To maintain the redundancy between the servers that provide the data that run the CAD system, we have to create a business continuity software. That's another $4,000 or $5,000. So all of those pieces together add up to the $62,000 request. Some of that is specific to equipment within the department, and some of it does support subscriber equipment that's out in the country, that out in the county, that talks into the communication center.
Okay. I was asking that question just as a way of making sure that whatever we're doing, which I'm sure you know, all the others will work. But then it also raised for me that I thought, if I remember however many years ago we went to the community, the whole county new system, that our all the municipalities will be taking care of basically their own equipment, so to speak. Is that happening, or are we just doing this to make sure that everything stays smooth?
Now, for example, since I think 1959, we provided the mobile radios in the fire and EMS units, but the portable radios, which we were able to find mm-hmm. grant funds to buy, those are being replaced by the individual agencies as we move on. Same thing with this mobile data program. We've found grant funding to kind of be the seed money and get one or two or three units in each department. But as they expand those for further use in their fleet, they're adding them at their expense, and we'll replace them 5 to 10 years down the road. I'm hoping that this National Public Safety Broadband will be the next generation equipment, and there will be grant money that will support that at the time. But, again, my crystal ball is real fuzzy on that one.
Thank you. Two more quick questions. The full-time administrative assistant, I didn't understand what you were saying. You're looking to re-upgrade a position now for the person who's in there, or are you thinking of the new hire?
Thinking of a new hire, and what I've done is underfunded the position the last 2 years because that person is working at less than 40 hours.
Okay. The other one I think I'm going to pass on. Thank you.
Martha.
Thank you. This might be a dumb question. Is Brian Wilbur still working for us?
He is.
Okay, great.
Through grant funding.
Right. Okay. The state never did. There's no statewide system, right? There's no SWIN, an acronym that many of us like.
We banished that acronym many years
right.
ago.
Right. I know.
The statewide wireless network did not come to pass. What they did do was create an Office of Interoperable and Emergency Communications, and their answer to it was to provide funding to the counties to upgrade their systems and link them together, which is the interoperable communications grant we've been working on that's building these microwave links. So we've built from the ground up rather than from Albany down and are creating these capabilities to interoperate.
Okay. Well, does that now, the 911 charge on our phones, like, I can't remember the proportion. Half goes to the state and half comes to the localities, or which way?
The statewide wireless charge, I think, is $1.20, and we have an additional 30 cents on wireless devices that's entirely ours. Of that money that goes to the state, there's a certain percentage that goes to the general fund, but there's also $75 million that has been used to fund these interoperable communications programs. My hope for that is that when I come back and see you in a year or so is that they will have turned that into a reimbursement program for operating expenses. That's the concept that the governor and the office is looking at, rather than making these block grants to the counties to upgrade their systems. There's also $10 million within that state surcharge that creates a public safety answering point reimbursement grant, and for which we have been receiving between $100,000 and $150,000 over the last couple of years, and that has been built into this budget as well.
Okay, because at NYSAC this week, the big new thing is rescuing 911, that they want us all to lobby really hard to get the state to hand back some of that money that's supposed to come to localities.
There's a couple of schools of thought, and I'm not completely in concert with NYSAC on this. And their move is to ask for a larger amount of the surcharge money in order to fund the next generation 911. And my fear is that with a push to do that, that's a one-time shot, and I think once we get to that capability, we may lose the ability to get the larger dollars for capital improvements in the overall communication systems, and it may jeopardize some of these reimbursement grants. So I understand what they're doing, and part of what they're trying to hold harmless in how they craft this proposal by extending the surcharge to track phones and other devices that have never been taxed before or surcharged before. So there is an investment that's going to have to come in from much higher levels, and I've seen some grant programs. I've helped develop some in the past with the enhanced 911 phase two capabilities, where there was an infusion of dollars that brought everybody up so they could receive wireless call locations. I think you're going to have to see them create something similar to upgrade everybody to be able to receive the next generation technology. But then it's a matter of having that funding stream to maintain it, moving ahead and move to the next technologies as they develop.
All right. Thank you.
Carol, Will, and Leslin. Go ahead, Carol.
Leslin asked one of mine, which is about the contracts. I didn't see where that was, but now that I add them all up, your little pieces, I see that it's there. I'm trying to understand which of your lines that first OTR request is the administrative assistant position is. I don't see where it is on page section 4, page 83 lists all your different positions. So which is the one that's retiring and which is the one that you're trying to move from half to full-time?
It's the same position. It's still at one full-time equivalency administrative assistant right at the top.
So somebody's retiring. You'll replace that person when they retire. And so the OTR is to have a second person who's half-time?
The OTR, I have only budgeted for 24 hours a week in that position. I want to restore it to 40 hours funding for that position.
So where is that on page 83 here? I'm looking here on the FTEs here. Do you have more than one administrative assistant?
No.
So it's listed here that you will, that you have one now and that you'll have one after?
That's what I'm not Kevin and Joe, help us out here.
Well, it looks like, Lee, in your 2016 roster, you showed this as one full-time equivalent. I'm not sure that 2016 number is accurate, that you had knocked it down. You had reduced the hours to essentially halftime. So probably the 2016 line should have been 0.5.
It depends whether we're looking at it from budget or whether we're looking at it from personnel, because it'd be an authorized position. It's just not funded fully to that authorized full-time equivalency.
Okay. So for budget purposes, we are going from a half-time funded position. And what Lee has asked for is when the new employee comes in to raise that to a full-time. So budgetarily, that's a plus half-time person with the money that goes along with it.
So which year did it go from full to half?
I think in 14. I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to go back and look. But
thank you.
Will.
Very quickly. Lee, you're covering a lot of stuff. It's kind of overwhelming. I actually sit on public safety, and I realize it's been a while since we've had you come to our committee and sort of talk about what you do or have us go up and see what you do. So I would hope that we could make that happen relatively soon because, I think we should all be better informed.
I think, yeah, if the public safety committee would like to, we could certainly give you the tour, but there are ways to demonstrate some of this equipment in-house where it would be difficult to do it remotely here, but certainly. Thank you.
Loveland.
I'd love to talk on the pony show again. I miss it. That OTR for the AEDs, now I'm a little bit confused. Famous last words. You said they have to be sort of maintained. Things happen to them every 2 years.
That's the recommendation.
I get that right.
That's
the recommendation.
Yes.
And it will cost $12,000, is what is suggested, to do that. And then 2 years from now, we do it again. It's only a $6,000 recommendation for that OTR. You said that'll work. So does that mean, I'm asking the simplest of questions, that we're only doing half of them?
I'm going to try to stagger it in December and January.
You get it with your bad self, Lee. All right. Got it.
We can extend the training over a period of time.
Over a period of time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Julie.
Carol asked the half of the question I wanted to ask. It was on page 83. But I see this OTR for making the administrative assistant truly full-time again as your number one priority. Is that what you really meant? That is your number one priority?
It's a priority, but I've got to have the service contracts, too. I think they're all equally
okay.
Important.
All right.
It'd be tough to do an either or on that.
Lee, thank you very much. Up next is Facilities, Arel. And you were here for my announcement. And it so far, the department heads have listened, but nobody on the legislature. So,
you're talking about stuff that happened at a meeting in Albany. Come on.
It's all in fun here, folks. Come on. Did anyone see Hands of God? You did? I wish I could use any of the lines from the play, but I can't. You know, I mean, it was...
Jim, I don't think we're allowed to talk about that.
Just any of them.
The phenomenal play.
Not Hands of God, Jim. Hand to God.
My wife was going to send me with a sock puppet, but we didn't. She was busy, and I couldn't find the magic marker, but, you know. I will have one before it's over.
So this wasn't good enough for you.
Yeah.
Ral, you're getting the mood lighting for this one.
Yes. I almost thought about putting music with my PowerPoint.
I hope so.
My daughter thought it would be a good idea. So as far as our budget, there's a slight increase. Most of that increase, that $68,000, is a result of over targets that I'll present later. The total over target was actually $94,000, so on base budget, there was actually a slight decrease. Full-time equivalents also has stayed constant at 32.5. However, we did propose in our budget to increase half-time cleaning position to a full-time position and then forego our one seasonal cleaner position. This is a graph that you've gotten used to over the many years, and when I've left it out, you've always asked me to include it. But basically, it provides maintenance historical data that shows the building area that we maintain. And as you see on the top left and right, over the last 15 years, we've actually dropped slightly in the total number of square feet that we maintain to 396,000. Our cost to maintain that is about 260,000, which is kept constant over the last 2 years. And our metric is per maintenance person, they maintain about 46,600 square feet. So a slight drop from what it was in 2003, which is still a little more than kind of the industry average. But those are important, I guess, data points. This is on the cleaning side. Actually, our square footage has increased probably a little over 60,000 square feet. And our cleaners, on average, clean about 20,000 square feet per cleaner, which has gone up from 18,003. Over target requests, there are three. The first one is to recommission and rebalance our HVAC systems countywide. The complaint that we typically get most often from departments is that either they're too hot or too cold, or one side of the building is just right, but the other is a little too hot or too cold. So every probably 5 or so years, we go through a recommissioning where we calibrate controls and systems, and also this time we're doing a rebalancing where we try to balance the amount of airflow to different parts of a building. And that's a 50,000 one-time over-target request. The next one is a maintenance vehicle replacement of an existing maintenance vehicle that's about 9 years old, one time as well, $34,000. That's used for maintenance and also for plowing during the winter. And the last over-target request was included in my budget, but had come up from Joe and other departments to install ceiling-mounted projectors in the Bev-Livesey conference room and in the old jail conference rooms. When we did the addition at the Human Services Building, we actually provided some of that infrastructure as far as cabling, power, and data up in the ceiling, but did not, at the time, Human Services had thought that they could provide a projector. In any case, so the cost for both installations, projectors installation, is $10,000 also one time. Nothing as fancy as what we've got here, but it'll do the job. 2016 highlights, we completed the public safety building jail improvements project and also a camera upgrade project for all their cameras. We completed the mental health building, lobby and reception area, and sixth floor improvements. And we completed just recently the roofing project at the old jail, building C in the mental health building, and also completed a facilities maintenance shop office renovation at our offices, and have completed a significant number of workplace violence assessment improvement projects that came end of last year and that we really moved to complete as much as we could the first quarter and second quarter of this year.
which include things like access control, locking certain parts of the building, cameras and areas improvements, putting counters in certain departments, creating a safer and more secure workplace for not only staff but also for the public that uses our buildings. I'll show a few pictures here so that you see some of the projects that we did this year, although I'm sure you're well aware of the parking project that we're doing now because it directly affects you, but things that you may not be aware of, and I'm sure you're probably wondering where has the $800,000 that we've given you over the last 4 years gone. So I'll just show you what we've done this year. So we did the roofing project in three buildings that I mentioned, and currently just started this week is a parking lot paving project that will include not only this complex but also the public safety building and the mental health building. The roofing project, as I said, we just did the final inspection last week. It was the old jail, and so there's some of the pictures of replacement of the roof. It not only replaced a roof system that was over 25 years old, so it already exceeded its warranty, but it also increased the amount of insulation on the roof. And the warranty on this system is a 20-year warranty. Also included, I've got a pointer, but we also replaced doors into the... Okay. So we put doors, replaced these doors, are also insulated doors. Those were rusting out, downspouts, as you see here, and then the roof. Building C also, we replaced the roofs there. That was a slight challenge because we already had those photovoltaic panels on there, so we had to remove them, store them, and so the contractor could remove the existing roof and replace it. And so you see the panels there. This is the lower roof. This is the higher roof. The challenge on at least the old jail, actually all three buildings, is that we have a lot of equipment on the roof. If it were a big open roof, it would be much easier and much less to do. But that was a challenge, and the contractor, DeWald Roofing, did a very good job. This is the last roofing project. This is the mental health building. It was a challenge because of its height, and there's a lot of equipment. This silo-looking piece of equipment is a cooling tower, and so the challenge was that they were doing the work during the summer. We didn't want to have the cooling tower down because that provides the cooling for the building. So initially what had been proposed is they were going to remove that, take it away, and store it for like 3 weeks. They came up with a very creative plan, which they would lift that with a crane for 2 days, extend the supports right here that would allow them room to basically roof under that. And so we basically were without cooling for only 3 days versus 3 weeks. These are some of the other shots there on the roof. It's a beautiful place to go up there. It's locked to the public, but I can give private tours if you want to. This shot I took last night, and this is, I like this. This is a view from the upper building to the lower, the Skylight Club, which we also replaced the roof on that. This is the one that we did over at our maintenance shops. Prior to doing this project, all of our eight maintenance workers were in one room that was 14 by 14 in size. So we basically, which doesn't need to meet code. So basically we attached to that existing office and created this area for our eight maintenance workers. And then we provided storage right above that space for storing a lot of our long-term extra materials. As far as challenges ahead, it's basically allocating our limited resources, mostly human resources. As you have seen in the full-time equivalents, we have not added staff. We've taken on over the last 3-4 years now large capital projects, but done that with existing staff, myself, Alan, our assistant director, Dana, our general maintenance supervisor, and providing some oversight on these projects. And so it's not always easy because we have all the maintenance to do as well as on our existing buildings. So doing that and still, you know, keeping our customers happy is a challenge. The other part is also increasing preventative maintenance. It's always been a challenge. It seems like we're always putting out fires and not always having enough time to dedicate to doing PM work. It should be more 70% doing PM and 30% really responding to unplanned maintenance. One thing that Joe had asked me also to share with you is where is all this money going to, that the capital funding, the $800,000? So this shows over the last 3 years kind of the areas and categories where we focused. First, I had said when we started that we would focus on life safety type projects or those that were caused deteriorating our buildings. And so we did fire alarm replacements and did some, repairs of our stairs and entrances to our buildings, which we did last year. This year, the focus has been on roofing. Like I said, one small fire alarm system, the parking lot, as you see outside, and some building envelope. And then next year, we've got HVAC, electrical, and flooring. And so I'll talk about those. So at the old jail, we're doing carpet replacement, electrical service and distribution upgrade, and at the HVAC controls upgrade. At the old courthouse, electrical service and distribution system upgrades. At the main courthouse, we're doing also electrical service and distribution upgrades. At mental health building, carpet replacement, and at the human services building, also carpet replacement. So old jail, the carpet there is 23 years old. Typically, you replace it after 12. It's 23 years old. I did not put the tape that you see there just to make it more dramatic. That's tape that's been there for a while. I think the red is up on Joe's floor on administration. This is finance. So it's becoming, you know, a safety hazard where it's unraveling and the seams are coming apart. So we're going to replace the carpeting with carpet tile, which is a better quality. It has some cushion underneath, but also it's easier to install. You don't have to vacate everything in an area as you would for roll carpeting. You can do sections fairly easily, and also you can replace those areas that tend to wear more than others, your traffic areas. So that's the old jail. Also at the old jail, old courthouse, we're replacing the electrical upgrades. I mean, these are 50 years old. This is our transformer. It's 8,000 volt step down transformer. There's a little roof over it. This is in the basement of the old jail. We had water intrusion, so we had to build a little roof above it so that we wouldn't basically fry the transformer. Since we did the work last year on the steps, we repaved the alley. Those of you that walked through the alley, you see that we paved that one section, flashed it to basically stop any water intrusion, which we've done. But all these units are 50 years old, and so it's time to replace them. Old jail also, we're upgrading the HVAC controls from pneumatic to digital. These are the compressors that, you know, send air to these controls here. This is a pneumatic and this is a digital control. So we're eliminating these and going to direct digital controls, and most of the controls would be in these panels at the old jail. At the main courthouse, also electrical upgrades. This equipment here is also 50 years old. These two on left and right, this is not as old. Those would need to be replaced as well. And carpeting at the mental health building, it's the oldest, 25 years old at that building. So there's basically no padding. It's pretty worn. Our cleaners do as good of a job as they can to do carpet shampooing, but it's time to replace that. And the last building for carpet replacement is the human services building. That one is 19 years old.
Anna has her hand up. And Rich.
Just a few questions. You talked about the HVAC controls, the digital. Are those going to be programmable, the ones that you're getting, programmable ones, so that we can minimize inefficiencies of heating?
Yes, it would be an expansion of what our existing HVAC controls, where we can manage it, all of it remotely, or even I can do it from my laptop anywhere. So yes, we would be able to better control the HVAC systems at the old jail.
Awesome. And The carpet tiles, are those, there's some, I know there's some really awesome technology out for having them be as green as possible. There's some reuse. What ones are you looking into to kind of get more on the sustainable green
side? Yeah, all the ones that we use are all sustainable, no VOCs, no adhesives that are no VOCs. Milliken is the system that we use, and so it's a LEED product. It's one that we installed at the health department. So, yes, we always look at a sustainable. So it's a little more than your typical roll carpeting, but well worth it.
And just in general, what steps are we in facilities taking towards using less energy, the technology that we're putting in HVAC systems that we're evaluating, furnaces that we're looking into? Can you talk about what your
expectations? Yeah, good questions. Back in almost, it's been 10 years ago, we did a major energy improvement project countywide, roofing projects, boiler replacements. So we have condensing boilers. So our systems are as efficient as they can be. And over the last 3 years, we've replaced some small boilers also to make them to go to more efficient. So every time that we're looking at replacing any piece of HVAC equipment, we always look at what's the most efficient systems out there, and we basically move forward with those. As Ed Marks did a presentation just recently to the department head meeting showing that we've exceeded our goal for greenhouse gas emissions reduction, 52%. Our goal was 20%. So much of that is attributed to the improvements that we've made over the last 10 years.
So we switched to electric in a lot of systems, correct, from natural gas? Like, from what I understand, I recall him saying, I don't remember. But I guess my last question would be, are we shifting to infrastructure that would allow for solar to be connected to some of the systems that we have as a source of energy production? And this is my own ignorance. I'm just curious if that's the direction you are heading with the systems that you're putting in place.
Well, not exactly. We have 8 solar installations on our county buildings. The largest is at the library, 148 kilowatt. And then most of our other buildings, like the building C that you saw when we did the roofing project, that's 25 kilowatt. So those are generating energy that goes right into use at that building. We also have solar hot water for domestic hot water. We're going to be putting it back at the old jail. We have it at the main courthouse. We have it at the mental health building. And we have it at the health department. And so we're doing those types of projects. We're looking at instantaneous hot water systems. We have that at the old jail for the entire complex. And we are looking at putting it at the public safety building because they're a high consumer of hot water for the showers for the inmates.
Thank you.
Rich and Mike, Martha Karras.
The rebalancing of the HVAC systems, is that going to increase efficiency in any way, or is it just going to be more comfortable?
Yes, at least on the recommissioning side, yes, because that is where we better calibrate to make sure that a thermostat is actually, we're not either overheating or overcooling the space, or our dampers aren't open at 80% when they should be at 50%. So, yes, our expectation is that, yes, it will show some savings in energy so that we're not bringing in air and cooling more than we should be as far as CFMs in a building.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mike Lane.
Rel, do you have a handle on what it's costing us to basically mothball the old library presently?
Actually, we brought that up this morning at our cabinet meeting with Joe.
I didn't know that, but I'm glad
you asked. Well, because we had hoped that we would have already sold the building by now.
Yes.
We've winterized the building, so there is essentially minimal cost. We're not heating, cooling it. However, what I did let Joe know is when you winterize the building, it deteriorates very quickly. And we've already had, I told Joe, a partial collapse of our roof on the northwest corner of the roof. It collapsed maybe a 10 by 10 area. And so we've put plywood and we've put some roofing membrane to cover it. But that's really the extent of our cost here. We're having a lot of vagrants camping out in the back part of the building, drug use also in parts of the outside of the building. So we're working with the enforcement to kind of patrol that area. So our cost now is minimal, but our hope is that we can move forward with selling the building to the developers soon.
Thank you.
Martha.
The transformer where you put the, I think you call it a transformer, where you put the roof over it to keep the water out?
Yes.
And then that looked very rusty, like it didn't keep the water from getting to the roof. So was that coming, that water was coming through the, from the stairs?
Well, now see that, this portion of the building is actually under that alleyway.
Okay.
And so the alley is right above where this transformer is.
Okay.
And so where the alley met the back of the old jail, water was coming in through the building there. We've corrected that. But we basically at the time, on a weekend, we shut down the power, opened up that transformer, made sure that there was no corrosion inside. And it's just the cabinet on the outside that is showing corrosion, but the inside is still good.
Okay, thank you.
Carol.
So are you replacing any of the actual heating or cooling units or just the controls for the units we've got, the heating and cooling?
Just the controls.
Okay, and the source of power, the source of the energy source we use in those buildings, so are they all, are all our buildings running on gas?
Well, for heating, electric. For heating, yes. For cooling, it's mostly electric.
Electric, okay, and the controls you're putting in are specific to the cooler, the heating and cooling units we've
for
got
both.
There.
Yes, heating and cooling.
So if we got some installed some other, where do we stand in the useful life of the actual heating system we've got in there now?
Well, we replaced, bless you, the boilers were part of the 2005-2006 energy improvement project, so those are fairly new, and those are the boilers. The boilers in the old jail basement provide heating for this building as well, and there's also a chiller that provides cooling for this building. The main courthouse, we replaced those boilers in 2006. So as far as the heating, we're very good in this whole complex. Those have been replaced within the last 5 to 10 years. On the cooling side, those systems have another 10 years of 5 to 10 years of service life.
And those are electric?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. So this isn't a year that we have any opportunity to decide whether we want to test out air source heat pumps on our own.
No.
Do it now or the parking lot's ripped.
Dooley.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Arell?
Yes.
In the old jail, when I get in the elevator, there is this terrible noise and lurch very often. Is that elevator in okay shape?
How much was it, Joe?
We're recording right now. Well, we are looking at making an improvement so that it doesn't give you that little jolt, because I've been in it as well. So there's hydraulic oil in the basement of that building, and so we're going to put heaters to keep it at a constant temperature that should minimize, if not eliminate, that jolting of the old jail. But in I think two years, 2018, we're looking at major investments in elevator upgrades in several of our buildings. So that's for 2018.
And with respect to setting temperatures, programmable thermostats. What level of cooling are you aiming for in the summer? How much difference between outside air and inside air?
We try to keep it at 72 in most areas.
May I ask why? Because that's certainly colder than our utility recommends.
If we've gone higher, we get complaints from all of our customers. That's, I mean, 73, 74 is warmer in our building. So we would like 73, but typically on average we're about 72 degrees set point at our buildings.
I guess in terms of working with the climate we have, that is not a good use of our energy, as I understand it. And if people are complaining about it being 75 inside when it's 85 outside, that doesn't seem like a good enough reason to me. I don't know if there's a group that meets on this. I would love to have
Our standard doesn't have it that high.
I classify that as a personal comment there, Dooley.
No, it's actually energy and
dollars. It's not a
dollars.
Question, though.
It's not a time. All right, here's another question. What kind of material do you use to melt ice?
We don't use salt. We use ice melt. So it's supposed to be more friendly to concrete steps and also for asphalt. So we spend more money for our ice melt, but we don't use calcium chloride.
Oh, it's not calcium chloride either.
No. But we do pay a premium for that.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Leslin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no personal questions. thanks, Mike, for bringing up the library. That's one of the things I wanted to ask. But I'll ask a general question about it. I was walking by a few days ago, and there is now signage out there about no parking in the section that used to be for, you know what I'm talking about. Off of Court Street.
Reporting. On Court Street here?
Day reporting.
Yes, day reporting. It used to be for day reporting, but then there's signage out there now that says no parking. I'm assuming that is for liability reasons. Why do we have, it says, except for county facilities vehicles?
It's for this temporary situation we're in right now with the construction outside. So we've moved all of our official vehicles over to that spot and then have parking garage permits for employees. So it's reserved only for that purpose and for that time. For the assessment vehicles, planning vehicles.
Oh, at the old library, okay.
That's it.
I'm thinking over to HSB.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Only because folks are asking. I have two other questions. I'm not done yet.
Okay. All right.
these are general. Do all our vehicles go to auction when we're no longer using them, and is that what's going to happen to the truck? Or what do we do with it?
Yes.
The replacement truck, all our vehicles?
That or if there's a department that may be interested, we give it or work out some arrangement with the department. In the past, we were actually the ones getting it from other departments.
You get the hand-me-downs.
Right.
And last but not least, I know I've asked this question before. I don't remember the answer. Do we get any kind of reimbursement from the court system for repair work that we do on the main courthouse?
Yes.
We do.
Yeah. If it's direct, what we call tenant work, where it's 100% improvement that they want, they pay 100%. If general maintenance, so maintenance of HVAC systems, cleaning those things, it's 25% reimbursement. It works out pretty well, better than it used to be. The reimbursement model that they used before was not as good as what we currently have.
May I ask a follow-up? So, for example, the repair to the steps that were really in bad condition, that would be considered tenant 100% reimbursement?
Well, no, that because we have other county departments in the building, so it's allocated based on square footage that they occupy in the building.
And the carpeting that we're looking to replace. Now, is that a roof that you just did?
We haven't done any roofing there.
That's scheduled.
We're not planned.
Something is scheduled to be done in the main courthouse.
Electrical.
Electrical.
Mm-hmm.
So would that be?
We always request, we always negotiate to see if they're not required to do those types.
Okay, don't say any more. Thank you.
Yeah. But they've been pretty good in the past.
Wonderful. Thank you.
The chair of the Facilities Committee, Dave McKenna.
Ralph, I just was curious. We're going to replace some transformers. What's the condition of the wiring in those particular buildings, the age and condition of it?
The wire's good because that was actually, most of that was all replaced when we did the renovation of the old jail when we converted it to an administration building back in, what, 91 or 93. Main courthouse, for the most part, also when we did, we've done renovations in the 70s and 80s. We replaced a lot of the wiring. So we're not really concerned with the wiring as much as the equipment, the transformers and switches and such.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mike.
Part of it was already answered, but just out of curiosity, the solar panels on the library, they're the oldest, right?
Yes, 2000, so 16 years.
What's the lifespan on those? I thought it was like 25 years or something.
Yeah, they say 25 to 30. We've replaced some. Most of them we've replaced because of vandalism, people throwing bottles or rocks on them. But we work with SunPower, and so they let us know how they're performing. And if there's an issue, if certain strings are down, they notify us, and then we replace them. Or if it trips, power surge. So they're pretty good at notifying us if there are any issues with the photovoltaics.
Carol.
I'm confused about what you said about the temperature. What's the temperature that we use for winter and summer?
For cooling, it's 72. And for heating, we tried to keep it in that same range.
72. And but yeah.
So, but our policy has a range for heating and cooling, and so we try to stay within that range of. And the cooling side is tougher because the warmer it is in the building, we can't extract the humidity. As humid as it is in New York, if you're up in the 74, 75, we don't have dehumidification, and we don't want it in our systems. So it gets very humid, which causes problems with copiers and such. And so we try to keep it at 72. There are some that we are at 72 or 73 or 74. But for the most part, on average, we're at about 72.
Okay, and what would we save with a 1 degree change in that policy?
Yeah, I can't remember anymore. I can't remember that anymore. Excuse me?
I didn't hear the answer. Cause
I said I can't. I don't know at this point anymore. 10 years ago, I would have known that, but.
Okay, thank you.
Well, give us a 10-year answer.
Okay. I can't remember.
No, I'm kidding.
All I can say is that this county has done a great job in reducing energy over the years, and we try to do the best we can. We shut units off at 4:30, the only one that we may run it every now and then is Joe when he's working on the budget on a weekend,
right.
So that, we keep him happy. But
let me just say this, that all of us that are over 50 years old, it doesn't really matter because we're cold all the time anyway. So, you know, it just, that's the way it goes. And those of you who aren't 50, it's a wonderful thing to look forward to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Human Services Coalition of Tompkins County. Kathy is here, and then following that will be the agencies. And we're officially 45 minutes over time now. So.
Oh.
We've only had one phone call.
I know. It was years ago. It was good.
Thank you, Earl.
Thank you, sir. I'm good.
Good evening. Delighted to be here.
Delighted to
for, I think I just counted, my 12th presentation. Okay. I don't have a lot of pictures, so I'm just going to go right at it here. This is the recommended budget. That includes a $3,000 one-time request, which you will see later, which is what brings it up to 2.72. And that figure up there is, I think in your books, you have it broken out among human service planning, health planning, and INR, but in front of you, you just have the combined figure. Some highlights from the Human Service Coalition over the past year. We did 728 attendees at 36 different workshops. That is up 16% in attendees, not workshops, from the year before. We also do consultants. That's when agencies call us, or we work up with agencies one-on-one. We either go in or they come to us. And we started doing that a couple years ago, and that was up 44% this past year. We did 46 different consults for 33 separate agencies. Homeless and Housing Task Force is a meeting where we get together providers, service providers that provide housing and services to people who are homeless or in danger of becoming homeless. That particular meeting does a lot of education and provides an opportunity for the providers to get together, share information about projects and do collaborations. And that we are averaging about 56 attendees. We do it every other month. So we'd actually do it five times a year. At those meetings. We've had some great meetings. And the Affordable Care Act navigators saw 972 individuals and families apply for health insurance, and in the third year that was up 47% from the year before. And 347 of those were during the open enrollment period. The others were, there are a lot of different categories where you can enroll throughout the year. Get a baby, change jobs, move into the state, a lot of different reasons you can keep open enroll. So they are very busy. It also, because a lot of people move into the community for this different schools, they keep busy all year round. We did about 932 vouchers for the Urgent RX program. The number of vouchers were down, but it was interesting. The number of prescriptions were upped. They increased about 70% over the year before. We think some of that has to do with the fact that where a lot more people are insured, people, though, might be insured in a high deductible plan or for other reasons, they still can't really afford the prescriptions that when they go to the emergency room or it's a health alliance or convenient care. 211 answered more than 13,000 calls. Almost 3,000 of those were, they do the screening and scheduling for the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, the VITA program. They do all that during a three-month period between January and April. Staff are participating in the regional Medicaid reform programs, including DSRIP and the population health improvement programs. And they're doing lots of traveling because of that, and I'll talk to that in a minute. And we took about 3,500 calls, health-related calls, in 2015. So we don't actually only just help people enroll in health insurance, that we then help them use their health insurance, because for people who are not really used to that, they frequently need help not just finding physicians, but actually knowing how to use the health insurance. That also includes things like we do the calls for the FISH program, which is transportation to medical appointments. Our major influences, as you just saw, we have increases in requests for services in almost all our programs through all three of our programs. And a major influence on us this past year is we've had about six staff, some longtime staff, who left over the past year. We using this as an opportunity to kind of reorganize. So a year ago we had about 13 FTEs. We've managed to reorganize. Right now we're at 9, but we're in the middle of hiring for two of the positions. So to give us up to 11, it's been you know, having that many people leave in 1 year, it's been hard, I think, on staff, but and by in looking at the numbers, how an increase in services, we may very well have to come back next year and add another staff person to the 11. I'm not sure that we can survive down two staff for long. Another thing is the regionalization. I know I've talked about this for a couple of years. It's continuing, and we don't see any thing to make us believe that it's going to change. And that means state and federal funding is not necessarily local anymore. It's going to regional programs, which means we do a lot more traveling. And the regions tend to be in the bigger areas, Syracuse, Rochester, Binghamton. Not only does it take an hour to get or more to any of these places, but it's really important that to make sure that Tompkins County is sitting at that table so that we're represented in the funding that's coming down. I have mixed feelings about what that does for service delivery, but I don't see it changing particularly. So one of the other things we're seeing, and we're doing, but you see it all around, you see it at the state, the federal level, is what I refer to as the integration of health and human service planning. So it used to be, they used to be fairly separate. These were your health-related things, these were human services. Now people are really understanding that there is really, in order to be healthy, you need transportation and housing and food and clothing and all the things that we used to look at as human service programs. So there's, I think this is a really good thing, the integration of those two kind of separate silos, but it makes for bigger and greater collaborative efforts, but that also takes more effort and time. We only asked for one over target request. It was a one-time request. It's for a new server. Our server is about 7 years old, and it no longer can keep up with the kind of security that we need because of all the health-related information we now have. So we did ask for money for a new server, which was recommended. I think that is pretty much us up for us. That's it for us, I think.
All right. Questions for Kathy on this, on the two-pager. Martha?
I love how the lights go up like that.
Hi, Kathy. You said six longtime staff left, and I know, like, Scott Hammond was one. He wasn't full-time.
He was not.
Okay. So is it... can you figure how many FTEs?
Right. We had 13, and after, right now we're at 9. We're going to hire, and we should be around 11.
You said you had 13.
Right. So we didn't, for people who know, Nancy, Betty, Scott, Cassandra, her last day was last week. So we're replacing people in different ways, but some of those positions, and we've combined some jobs, but some of those positions will not be replaced. Some of them we lost because of funding. The state eliminated some programs. The Creating Healthy Places program was not continued. Some part-time people we combined.
Got it. Okay.
What was the one that wasn't continued?
Pardon me? It was a program called Creating Healthy Places, and it was a five-year program. It did a lot with neighborhoods. It did a lot with building walkways through, you know, Stewart Park, and to keep people active and moving, and it, in Dryden here. I know the state just decided they weren't going to do that program anymore. They were going to concentrate on schools at risk, and we just actually didn't have any in Tompkins County, so we didn't qualify for the funds anymore.
Anna.
Another question, going back to the regionalization. Are they, I'm hearing this from a lot of the departments, that there's a state push for a lot of things to be regionalized rather than local. Are there opportunities for more telecommuting that you're seeing in part of these that and it's effective, or it's just simply not effective for you guys?
I think people do it because they know that not everybody's going to travel. They just can't travel all the time. I don't think it's as effective as being in one place. I mean, I myself have trouble sometimes paying attention to it. They do use it, but We haven't done it. No, it's not the best to do it that way. So.
I mean, I know there's some systems, but it requires pretty high technology to create something that feels realistic so that you haven't experienced any of those. I'm just wondering if any of the bigger cities have those kind of systems in place that you feel it would be effective and worth it. But
yeah, I don't too. I'm going to bring John up. He's going to come for the next part anyway. So John does a lot of traveling. John is our new director of community services. Is it John Mazzello?
Thanks, John.
You do a lot of the.
Sure. I can say, related to your question, that the benefit of being there in person means that the concerns you're bringing from Tompkins County are heard more effectively. So the folks that are on the phone are often forgotten. Most technology that's used is a conference call. There's some screen sharing. There's some video coming from a central source out to the attendees.
But it's
not so much going back in. So you do have sometimes where that situation where you raise your hand in the electronic way and your question is received about 45 minutes later.
For the most part,
being there for these regional meetings, I think across all of these, is the most effective for getting Tompkins County's priorities shared at the regional level.
I mean, that's actually, it's interesting, too, because, you know, you can sit around with a group of people here and say, okay, these are our issues in Tompkins County. You're sitting with five different counties, and they have very different issues. They really have different issues. So you really have to look at it very differently. It's like we're not just going to concentrate on what we need here. You got to be partnerships and part of the team, and it's, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just different.
Right. I mean, if you could physically see each other, that would be totally different. I've been in those kind of meetings, and you feel like you're actually there, and it sounds like people aren't prioritizing that. And if it's still the old system with the phones, forget it.
No, but it's like Bev's in Syracuse today. John was in Binghamton yesterday. It's a lot of road time.
Oh, Carol.
Yeah, you can do that on computers now, which probably they all have. I always find this part of the budget so confusing because not your big filling out of it is not confusing. It's the template that we make you use because for our own departments, it's very clear where we're leveraging outside money. But on the summary pages for what your budget is, it doesn't show the revenues, but then on the breakdowns, I can see that that you use what we give you and leverage some. So, like the Health Planning Council for the $69,000 that we on page 5-29, what we give you of $69,000, you're also bringing in $365,000 of other revenues. So, can you give us some sense of what your total budget is compared to what you ask us for?
Ken, our total budget is about $1,100,000, 1.1. I did bring my finance person with me, Jill Sage, who's fabulous. If you have any
questions
for her.
Well, no, that overall figure, that's very helpful. And if there's some way you could be giving us that, it's so useful for us to understand.
Kevin.
It is hard to do.
You can have. Yeah.
I want to apologize.
It's a template we've used for a long time.
I preserved the entries from the agencies that captured their larger numbers, but because of the way the system works and because the agencies were willing to come under the same umbrella for data entry, which was a big help for us, they were entering it into the same format. And so it got standardized. I did preserve their entries about their total budget. It's in the data that will be eventually presented in the full program impact report that will be posted on the budget webpage as it has in years past. I've put in a request some time ago to our vendor and expect to hear from him soon about the development of that report that will make that available. And I will let you all know as soon as that's posted and ready, available for you to look at.
Well, thank you. And it's actually a big step forward that we even have it in the breakdowns for these units. It just doesn't seem to be in the totals.
Thank you, Kathy. We're going to switch to HSC Community Agencies.
Okay, I'm not going to touch it. So our first slide, as you know, that the recommendations that are passed on to the county administrator come from a review panel that reads all the applications, puts in lots and lots of hours doing this, interviews people, does site visits, and then deliberates. And these are the eight members of our team this year. I'll read them all to you. Marsha Baum was a new member this year to the committee, and these are both on top. And Jeff First, who's been on for a few years, just went off the committee. So some of the people have been on for a while. These are people we like to get people who really understand and know human services, and we've been very lucky to do that. These are the agencies that go through the process. You know, it's not a closed process. We had a new applicant this year, which is the one highlighted, the Village at Ithaca, is new to the process this year. And we do these 18 agencies. We also review OAR, but they come to you separately to do their own presentation, which I believe you've already had. But we do the review committee makes a recommendation to the county administrator. Yep, there it is. It's a 1.56% increase for the agencies. Some major influences. These haven't changed a lot. The external things that affect almost all the agencies when you get them down and talk to them is lack of safe, affordable housing, lack of accessible transportation, and behavioral health issues. The housing, the county and the city both did housing studies that highlighted the need for housing, especially, I mean, there's a need all around, but at the level where people who are very low income, it is almost impossible to find, really impossible to find in the city, which means that they are much more likely to live further out into the rural areas where the lack of accessible transportation. One of the things I brought up the other day, it was like people who most need the bus in transportation are still the same people who are going to get dinged the hardest if they are late for work or if they can't find transportation at nights, weekends, off shifts. Some of the rural areas, you know, might have three or four buses during the day, and it's very hard to get there and back, especially if you have children that you have to drop off somewhere. And I don't have to tell people some behavioral health issues, the drug issues, and mental health issues that are affecting all the agencies and all the clients they deal with. Internally, multi-county agencies and regionalization, like I talked a little bit before for us, there are pluses and minuses when you have agencies that are multi-county, and sometimes that multi-county keeps growing. It's a little more difficult to have control over your programs and your budgets when you, you know, are involving some are two, some are three. We have an agency that goes all the way to Western New York. Increase in collaborative efforts, again, really a positive thing that people are getting together for things like continuum of care has over 20 agencies involved in it. The collective impact has a lot of different agencies. The Collaborative Solutions Network. A lot of agencies getting together to talk, but it takes more time and it takes more resources to do. It has a much deeper impact and probably is much more far-reaching, but it's just a slightly different way than we used to do business before. New regulations. There are new nonprofit fiscal regulations. There are regulations coming down about exempt and non-exempt. There's the increase in the minimum wage. These and what that does, a compression of salaries for agencies. All these things are having an impact on the nonprofits in our community. And the other thing is staff turnover. We have three new directors in this group this year. Ithaca Health Alliance, that's Norbert Miklowski. Southside Community Center, Leon Lawrence, and Women's Opportunity Center, Kate Shanks Booth. Those are all new directors this year. But I'm sorry, I didn't flip my page here. But half of the directors of the agencies that go through our process are new within the past 5 years. And nine of these agency directors are new within the past 2 years. That kind of turnover, and I'm talking about the staff, that means that, you know, you really have to support people at that level in order so to make sure that people are successful. So these are the over targets. These four are all one time. There was a $5,000 one-time over target for Catholic Charities. They have started a new program. It's called A Place to Stay. This is a house that they are renting. It's transitional supportive housing for homeless women. Women will stay there 3 to 6 months. They'll get support from Catholic Charities and then move on to permanent, more stable housing. Downtown Ithaca Children's Center. It's a pre-K curriculum that builds on, it's called Leapfrog, it builds on the preschool curriculum they're already using. That was a one-time request. Southside Community Center, it's, as most people know, Southside has decided to remain an independent agency and not go under the city. And so the review committee decided to recommend $10,000 of one-time funding to help them in this next year. And we requested a couple of years ago, we received some one-time funding that lets us, the Human Service Coalition, use it for to support the agencies, either who need emergency funding or, as you know, agencies tend to go like this. They're up and down. So it just allows us to have some funding to help agencies that might need some capacity building to help them work better, either them or their boards. This is the one over target that we asked for in target funding. It was $12,100, and this is for the Multicultural Resource Center. And this is to stabilize their salaries. The review committee felt that this was an important agency that does a lot of important programs to our community. It helps both stabilize in the sense that it lifts up some of the salaries to be competitive with other salary with people in those similar positions, but it also gives them money so that they're more stable and don't have to depend solely on some grant funding for these positions. Fabina is here if anybody has any questions about that. Fabina Colon, who is the director of the Multicultural Resource Center. And I think that is... No. Sorry. We'll go back there.
Kathy... I have in my budget piece a list of all the agencies and how much money that each one got. Is that?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Kevin, I just it's not in a slide, but most of the time people ask. Actually, one of the reasons we wanted to give this to you is for the same reason that somebody asked about HSC. If you look at this. And it, well, actually, I'll let John talk about it. John's sitting up here, and he put this chart together.
Sure. So the one thing that we can draw your attention to is on the far right-hand side, you can see, as one of the questions was for us, for HSC, the relationship between the amount recommended in county funding and the total budget for the agencies. So you can see that on the side, ranging from a low of, looks like about 3% of total budget to some higher ones, a few that are higher. You can see that relationship there. But for a lot of the organizations, you can see that the county funding really contributes to a much larger funding pool. That means that more money is being brought into the county. The amount of county funding that the organizations are receiving is supporting them in bringing additional funding, whether it's through grants, contracts, donations, other ways of bringing money into the county and then spending that for the most
part. May I interrupt you 1 second? Your far right number, 2017 REC as percentage of budget, is that the county's money that you're talking about?
That's
on the
correct.
Right.
The okay. Percentage, goodness. The percentage there.
That's okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, the percentage there is, so for example, Advocacy
percentage
Center.
Total budget.
The total HSC recommendation is 4.4% of the $1.2 million.
All right. Questions? Dan and anyone else? Martha, Carol, Mike, did you have your hand up?
You asked my question.
Okay. Dan, go ahead.
Thank you. I've got a couple of questions. First one's a process question. The ones that we're seeing that are considered recommended OTRs compared to not recommended, is that recommended from you, or do you recommend all the OTRs and then our administration pared them down?
We recommended all of those to Joe, and Joe recommended the one-time ones.
Okay, thank you. My next question is about Southside Community Center. There was exploration going on about whether they would become a city department. They chose not to. Presumably that would have stabilized their funding quite a bit. I'm just so they rejected the option to join the city, but then now they're asking the county for funding. Is that accurate?
So they've gotten county funding for years.
Yes.
Through this process. This, what we recommended was given to Joe before that vote was taken. So what we did is we sat down with the interim director at that time, was Dr. Nia Nunn, and we asked, I had a long talk with her, and she said that they needed, that they wanted to spend a year to see if they could make it work. And so all the target funding that came from before was made one, was recommended as one-time funding for a year. And yeah.
Are they requesting any additional funds from the city this year?
I don't know. I can't answer that. They did request target funding, but it was recommended as one-time funding.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's how the...
Excuse me. I have Martha, right? And then I have you, Carol. And then Leslie and then Anna. Or the other way around. Or Rich. Okay, we'll go right down this way. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right. Rich and I both have a question about the numbers, but let me...
do you want to do it as a choral question? Or?
In round?
I would like to ask about OAR, and I don't know, I don't see it in your...
We talked to Joe about that. Since they come separately, we no longer include it, actually. But we did the the review committee recommended, where am I here? It's 70,000 in one-time funding to support the college initiative program they have. That was the recommendation.
Okay. They asked for 80,000 in target.
They did.
And you recommended 70 in one time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that, I guess this is a Kevin question, because maybe if we could figure out a way that can show up. I know this basket.
Yeah, we can do it either way. We're willing to do whatever way works for you.
Thank you.
Rich?
Kevin.
No, Kevin. Go ahead.
The OAR request and information is in that same section, on beginning on page, section 5, page 30. We treat them as a separate agency in the budget book. I know that may not have always been the case, but some of that's a bit of a legacy of export of data from the financial system in which they are a separate entity.
Right, but what's missing is HSC's recommendation to Joe, which is helpful to us.
Okay, so, perhaps yeah. We can follow up later about how you'd best like to see that.
Okay, it's an extra step, I understand. And then the other thing is, Kathy, it looks to me like none of the agencies asked for target funding except multicultural and Southside, is that right? Or
No. We always struggle about how to give you this chart. What you don't see on here is their requests.
Okay.
You don't see what they got last year, and we can. You don't see the requests. So did somebody talk about column fatigue? So we just tried to make it as simple as we could, and we can give you whatever you like. We have charts that go column
us.
And column and column. Do you want to see what they requested,
yes.
what they got?
Yes.
You want to see what they requested.
Yes.
And what
I want to see what they requested and what you recommended. I assume that column says target OTR recommended. Well, and
so the first column would be what we recommended.
Take a look at page 18, too, Martha.
Page what?
18. 5-18.
That's requested. It's still confusing as to whether that was requested by HSC to Joe or by the agency to HSC.
Joe?
If you're looking at the budget book, it's what was requested of me and then what was recommended by me. That's what's in the book.
So that's
what you're looking for here.
Page 18.
18 are the OTRs. It's not all of the agencies.
Isn't that what
I guess
you're asking
that's
about?
Where I'm confused.
Right. So what you're looking for, I mean, historically, you've had a multi-column thing that shows where it started, sales tax, and all these other things. It sounds like you would like something similar to what's been done in the past, where it begins with what was asked for, it includes what came out of that review process at HSC, and then what came over. Mm-hmm. I think I'd coach Kathy to try to keep this simple, because often we get, you know, lost in some of the details, but I'm sure
we have
a larger matrix for
you. We'll get it to you tomorrow.
Okay, for me, I'd get rid of agency total budgeted expenses if you really need to trim things. But what we need to see is what came out of the agency to you.
Yeah, the only reason we put that total budget, because there wasn't, in the PIAs, there used to be a place where we could put their total budget so you could see what that kind of leverage. But there wasn't this year, so we thought that was important that you understood how much money comes in that these agencies bring into the community.
I know. I understand that.
But we can get you. We'll get you columns.
Thank you.
Can we get going with the question? Rich?
Yeah.
Do you have a question?
On the extra sheet that wasn't on the slide, when you say target OTR recommended, that was recommended by your committee.
Yes.
So then when we look in our budget book, that $12,100 was not recommended by the county.
Correct.
Administration.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll go down the road. Carol.
Okay. I'm even more confused now. So if you look at starting on page 19, where for each agency, starting on page 19 and going on, you've got a column that says 2016 and a column that says 2017. This is for Joe and Kevin, not for you, Kathy. But it looks like expenditures over at the Advocacy Center went from $974,000 in 2016 to $53,000 in 2017. And these numbers make no sense.
Where?
Kevin, see if you can help us.
That's a good observation. There is a little bit of a apples to oranges comparison issue there because of the way we ask people to use the data entry in the new system. All you're seeing in 2017 is county money. So that's an allocation in the revenue line. That's an allocation of the sales tax that the HSC passes through the HSC to the agencies, and the expenditures is the total amount. And then the net local is the levy amount that passes through to the agencies. In contrast to that, the 2016 was often people entering their agencies, entering their full expenditures, their full revenues, and the net local being the county portion. This is an artifact of the transition to the new system. And
isn't the opposite? If we just entered them into the other portion of our new system, it's just like we do our departments and their programs, wouldn't we have the information that we're asking for?
What we did was, because we asked the agencies to join us under one umbrella for budget entry, was they did enter it just like departments. So just like departments, all you're seeing here is the essentially the county money. You see the full expenditures. You see the revenues that come, in this case, from the sales tax, and then the net local represents the levy portion, much as you would with departments.
So how much work would it be for you to just give us the printout as though it were one county department and each one was a program, the way they entered it?
I'm lost. Well, why is 2016 so different from 2017?
Because in 2016, most agencies, there was probably not a real standardization, but they would enter their full expenditures, total, their total revenues from all sources, and then what would be left in the net local section would be the county money.
Okay, but that's not what you have for 2017.
That is what we have in 2017.
No, so why are the 2 years so radically different?
Because in 2016 it was different than that. I'm sorry, I probably have misspoken. Martha,
it goes from 40.
In 2016, it was their full amounts.
Yes, exactly.
In 2017, it's much more like a county department, just entering the county portion.
I think I still had the floor here. You can come back around. So can you answer the question, how much work would it be if they've already entered it the full way? How much work would it be for you to print that out and just give it to us?
This was what I was describing earlier about my conversation with the vendor, asking them to produce the report that we have provided in years past, which contains all of the entry, the full PIA form entries. And I already put in quite a bit of effort in capturing the agency's original full budget entries and pasting that into the explanatory section that accompanied the dollar amount. So when we get that report, you'll see a notation that says something like agency full budget, $1 million, and then right, adjacent to that, you would see that the county contribution is a part of that.
Yeah, and can we get it for 2016?
I think it's right.
What's also in the comparison between 2016 and 2017.
Excuse me.
But I think if you want to know the full budget for each of these agencies that we're talking about right now, I think that's what Kathy has given you. So the Advocacy Center, for example, the 1.23, that's that full cost budget for the Advocacy Center. And if you look at the far left, the 32,000 is what our levy is contributing to it.
I want to know how that compared in 2016 and 2017.
That's what's missing.
Okay. I'm not sure we're set up for that. We can see what we can do. I'm not sure that's the way the data was acquired this year.
Okay. And then I understand that the source we've always chosen to take this money from was the city sales tax, which in prior years had grown. In prior years,
but that's not a choice. That's the sales tax agreement that we have with the city. So that's not our choice to.
Okay, but that's what we've used. So if you look back again at page 5-17, we basically the agencies as a whole are going to be receiving $34,000 less than they did last year.
But I think that's a function of one-time money. Kevin, am I right here? Or Kathy, am I right about when you look at the 2016 budget, that 2016 budget may have included one-time money in it as well. Am I correct there?
Right. When we begin a year, we pull the one-time money back out, and that provides the new base on which that gives the agency target. So the number you would see in the 2016 modified would be a number that was included one-time money. So when we take that out to set the stage for the 2017, it's necessarily a lower starting point.
We're going to move on here. Mike?
Well,
I just wondered, we have other departments, and I think we're 45 minutes behind.
We're more than that behind. Let me just say for the oldies here on the ledge that this agency has been doing this for us for how many years, Kathy, so that we didn't have to do all these agencies. And they've come up with this every year. And as long as I've been here, I've heard the same questions over and over. And, you know, what has been the change? Kevin, why is it so confusing or not confusing this year as opposed to other years? Somebody want to take a shot at that?
I would, again, use the apples and oranges
All right.
metaphor. The 16 was full budgets. 17 in the program summaries, that's just county money, and that has to do with the way the inputs from agencies and departments were collected into the new system.
We'll go down the road here. Will, did you have your hand up?
I did, way back, and this was a very specific thing. I wanted to ask Kathy about. You mentioned the recommendation for Southside, 10,000. Can you say just a few words about that? And then, Fabina, I see you sitting over there. I didn't know if you wanted to add anything to the request that was not recommended for wage stabilization or whatever. But
you want me to talk about Southside?
Yes.
I.
What is it for?
Southside is just for programs. They had always gotten about $10,000.
So this was consistent with what had programs. Been the pattern. Okay,
right.
Thank you. And Fabina, was there anything to be added? Or?
Is the microphone on? Fabina, if you want to come.
Yeah.
That was short. That'll do. Okay. Thank you. So I guess the question is if there's any additional comments that I would like to make regarding the OT. Yeah. So MRC has functioned over the last couple of decades with one full-time staff member and a part-time staff member who was coordinating mainly the talking circles on race and racism, which is our anchor program. And that position has actually been predominantly funded by the Park Foundation. And so the HSC has helped us with covering salary for the director position. And MRC has grown. It has built a lot of capacity over the last year and a half. And I, as the new director, am looking to stabilize some support, a support system for the Multicultural Resource Center. We currently have about 3 staff members that are working with the Ultimate Reentry Opportunity Initiative, which is a collective impact initiative that was started in the county to look at the system of reentry here in the county for individuals that are coming back from jail and prison. So that has been an expansion. And predominantly, the one staff member, which was the director, had been doing a lot of the administrative tasks, all the way from purchasing food to planning to developing to implementing. And we wanted to streamline those processes and build some stability so that we could extract some of those activities from the director position and get some support with bringing in an administrative assistant, which is very, very much needed. And so that's basically what the additional request was.
Thank you very much.
Leslin, you had your hand up long ago.
I did, and many of the questions got asked, but I just want to clarify. Kathy said they can produce a new document for us tomorrow. I'm just trying to make sure that it, whatever gets produced would include 2016, what was received by the agencies, 2017, what was recommended by the Human Services Coalition, 2017, what was recommended or approved by the county administrator. Those are extremely important things, because this is really confusing to me. I'm with everyone else. I couldn't
figure out. Can I qualify? Want what they got in 16, what they requested for 17, what was recommended for 17, and you have what the county administrator.
Administrator.
Yep.
That's very
helpful. We've got that.
Thank you.
Anybody else over there?
I did, but Will asked the exact same questions I had.
Oh, we're done. Thank you so much.
Jim?
Okay. Yeah.
I meant to answer Dan's question about Southside.
I think you should talk to him about that after the meeting, okay? Because we're an hour behind. And, you know, let me editorialize while we're changing. The South Side looked a gift horse in the mouth and turned it down.
I'm sorry. No, that's not right, Jim.
Yes, it is right.
South
we're not going to make comments. Remember, only questions.
Everybody around the room makes comments.
The city asked South Side to look at merging, and they looked
at
it.
Can I just say there's no one in this room who knows what happened there but me? So let's not do that. Okay?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
No one there who knows has been.
I was doing a history lesson. We asked in the mid-1970s about it. My call from the airport.
Okay. Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk about the budget this evening. I've got Josh Nally and Roxanne Noble here.
I see them.
Answer any questions we might have, and I'm going to move right along through this. Not much change in the budget from last year. Not much change in the number of people. Here's some of the things that influenced our budget. You can read down through the list, but basically it's the growth that's associated with year-to-year changes in salary, and then we had some people last year that weren't at the full working rate. A couple things we have to buy and some travel. Quick look at the airport. Good news, available seats are up 15%. That's the first time in quite some time.
Oh, all right. That's good news.
Poor service reliability is still our number one concern. Two of our three destinations are Northeast Corridor, and it's tough sailing to get down there. Working hard on customer loyalty, and there are some of the things that we're doing. I'll talk a little bit more about them in a minute. And we're really focused on tightening up management this year in the interest of cost containment and sustainability for the enterprise. We mentioned the seats. We've got a stable high load factor around 80%, which is required these days. If you fall much below 80%, you're going to lose the flight, but we're hanging right in there. We talked previously about all the challenges of deregulation. The three main airlines are focused on the main line. We have contract service here from the main line. It doesn't get quite the same attention that the mothership does. And we've got structural problems with Newark and Philly that aren't going to go away. And sometimes people think that, we're unreliable, and sometimes we are, but we have the same reliability statistics as Syracuse, Binghamton, and Elmira. Here's what we're up against. It's easy to shop for fares. If you got an iPhone, you can go do it. Our load factors are high. Our seats are constrained below the demand for the Ithaca market, and that means that ticket prices can be a little bit higher. And the airlines are engaged in load leveling between the airports. They'd like every airplane from Syracuse, Binghamton, Elmira, and Ithaca to leave at 80% load factor or better. And so if somebody's lagging someplace else, they'll cut the rates and try to get us to move to those airports. The way we combat that is to try to treat our customers really well and to promote the unique aspects of our airport. And we were fortunate to to receive, although the money hasn't come. We've got a $350,000 grant from the state of New York to help promote the airport under the SOARS program. Trying to make the airport part of our community. You know about the open house and the runway 5K. We raised $2,000 for the SPCA through that event. But more importantly, people got out and realized that this isn't some place you get to like going to jail through security. You know, it's really kind of a nice place, and it's your hometown airport. Tommy's going to fly next year. This year, they're putting the fabric on the airplane right now. If you want to see how the airplane was covered 100 years ago in the factory in Ithaca, just come on up to our office and we'll show you. And they're volunteers, my wife included, with big log needles sewing the fabric onto the airframe. We've got a $650,000 grant to move and expand what in the past has been East Hill Flying Club, but now is East Hill Flying Academy. That's a big project for us, once again state funded, and the money hasn't arrived, but the commitment's there. And lastly, our crash fire rescue folks are involved in mutual aid. We now respond if there's an emergency, for example, in the Cornell Business Park or an accident right on 13 or Warren Road, something within our federal response time. And it allows aid to reach the accident much quicker than you can drive from the Lansing Fire Department, for example, which is over by the school. I've got a new website that works on the phone as well as it does on a computer. The restaurant's going great guns. Ground transportation sorted out. We've got more than we ever had before, and aside from an occasional complaint from one company to the other, it's working really well. And all in all, we're very focused on customer satisfaction. We want to work smarter, and the big focus for 2017, is to build a comprehensive business plan. We need some help to do this because we need to look at best practices. There's some obvious things that we'd like to do, like increase flights and therefore revenue. But the biggest thing from my point of view is we want to work with each of our service providers at the airport to incentivize growth. And we'll be looking for ways to build that into their contracts so that it costs them a little bit less if they do a little bit more. They can put a little bit more in their pocket, and they'll be out there trying to bring customers to the airport. We're going to have a federal airport inspection here within a month, and we now manage everything with this tremendous software program that Josh found. Instead of writing notes to each other about what needs to be done, it's all entered in a database. It's all printable for the inspector. It's pretty neat. We'd be happy to show it to you anytime you want to come up to take a look at it. We've increased our line item a little bit for the fact that the terminal's getting pretty old, and there are some major systems that are likely to go down, and we're anticipating that. But we're also changing our management philosophy. We're not just going to change something because, you know, it's been a long time. We're going to wait till it breaks, and we're going to have contingency money available so that when it breaks, we can immediately replace it. And that way we'll get a full service life out of all of our systems up there. Well, some capital projects coming up. This list adds up to about $20 million. The list for the past year was about $5 million. So that'll give you a sense of how we've been working our way through the list. Three things most important. One is we call it the terminal security upgrade, but it's really an overhaul of the terminal. I've talked to you before about that. DMV testing pad. We can't test commercial licenses here anymore because the federal standards changed, and we're going to make a pad out at the airport so that we can continue to, or so that we can return CDL testing to Tompkins County and help out those people in the community that need to get a truck license, for example. And then there's the real big deal, which is getting DOT relocated off the waterfront so that we have opportunities to use that land more wisely than a transportation facility. And finally, we really want customs up there. We have at least once a week somebody wants to fly in here directly internationally, and they can't do that right now. So we're going to try to fix that before long. I said I'd move right through it fast, so questions.
Anna. Martha.
A few questions. In all, awesome first statement. And I know a bunch of stuff that you're doing, so I just wanted to get a few updates. When you talk about the comprehensive business plan and bringing someone in, are you including part of that an evaluation of, you know, sort of this idea that you had about having multimode transportation and maybe do a demand assessment, like market assessment of that? Is that going to be part of evaluating whether that's a realistic use of the airport and whether it would strengthen it and increase market demand for the airport?
Specifically, that line was aimed at getting consultants' help in here to take what we have right now and reorganize the contracts in the most efficient way. I don't know if that's getting quite back to your question.
I think what you're saying is just to make focus right now on what you've already got, make it more efficient and more effective.
Right.
This, what I'm talking about, it would be an addition, right?
Right.
Okay. And then the other question, the DMV testing pad.
Yep.
Could that also be used, because I know the TCAT bus for testing, there's the whole question of having to go really far away at this point to do the testing. If that is stabilized at the airport, could they do that there?
I don't know about TCAT. I do know that this pad is about 200 feet by 400 feet, which is about the size of a football field, including the sidelines and everything. And they put up cones according to the test. And then they go out and they can drive around. In addition to DMV, Cornell wants to use this pad for their engineering experimental vehicles. You know, every year they have to design something to a formula and enter it in a competition. Josh has got enough millings from the runway out there to build the base of this, so we're going to do it self-help. And by the way, along those same lines, one of the ways we're going to increase business at the airport is more rental cars. Right now, right. When we have a surge in rental cars, they have to truck them in from someplace else. Using the millings from the runway, Josh's innovation, we're going to make a several hundred car lot. So instead of having parking lots hanging from the tree branches out there, rental cars hanging from the tree branches, we're going to have a rental car lot right by the wash rack. And that'll mean more cars here, and that'll mean more cars rented, and that'll mean more revenue to the airport.
Yeah,
and we're doing it ourselves.
So I think probably Dan could answer whether or not that's a feasible spot for TCAT, right? Is that large enough, do you know?
I do not know. I assume if it's big enough for a truck, it's big enough for a bus, but I'm just...
Yeah, no, you can take a school bus out there and do a CDL test. I just don't know what TCAT's requirement is. If it's to get a CDL for a potential driver, the answer is yes. If it's something else they're doing,
that is
I don't
what
know.
They do. It's also DMV testing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see
yeah.
that coordinated with them, maybe reaching out and make sure, because that would make the yeah. efficiency rate of their getting drivers ready and able to go stabilized. Yep. And the last question is, where does the $40 million grant, have you heard anything about that? Because that's the basis for DOT relocation, for the solar panel drive, the...
Okay, so the $40 million grant, you're aware that Rochester and Elmira were awarded yesterday. This came kind of out of the blue. The story in the Ithaca Journal this morning is very accurate. It's very difficult to see inside the process, so although I had some indications beforehand that Elmira had an inside track, and that became obvious, we weren't sure, you know, exactly when this would be announced. I will tell you this, in the case of Elmira and perhaps in the case of Rochester, that was a done deal before the RFP came out, and it relates to the development of I-86 and other initiatives, you know, that are down there. I don't know.
Does that exclude us?
I.e., it's a political decision. So now the question becomes whether they would spend any more money as close to Elmira as Ithaca.
So they haven't announced all of them yet. So
No, they've announced two. So there's $120 million remaining right now. And this afternoon I was told that through a source that the state would announce the next round in December. That would be good news for us because it would give us an opportunity to go back to the state and say, hey, wait a minute, you know.
This is a brilliant project.
Our argument very simply is the I-86 corridor is a great idea. It'll help all of us. It'll be decades before anything really happens. The goose that lays the golden egg is in the middle of Tompkins County, and you better spend some money in Tompkins County to keep things going while you're waiting for I-86 to come along, because you're not going to get anything back out of I-86 for years, and you're getting a lot out of this community right now in terms of holding the upstate economy together. So I'll be working on that pitch, and we'll go back and see. I don't know if the rest of the 120 is a done deal. I just know that Elmira got the money. Now they got to put the plan together. We put a great plan together.
We need
to get the money.
Well, however we can support you, because it's brilliant. It is an amazing plan. So thank you.
Thank you.
Martha, and then Leslie.
Yeah, I had the TCAT bus question too, so I hope we'll follow up. In the ongoing pitch to get a different hub, wasn't there a promise that some of the community employers, et cetera, were sort of pledging to take to have such and so many seats, and that was part of your pitch to some of the airlines?
You're talking about a revenue guarantee with new airline service. We'll be going out to Chicago next Tuesday to talk with United Airlines about Chicago service. And if they initiate Chicago service, they're going to want a community guarantee that they make money. We have pledges from any number of people in the community, which we'd have to go back out and refresh against a specific opportunity. We have a general pledge, and I think we had a commitment of $500,000 or something like that to cover any potential loss. We've done this twice before, and we've never had to pay yet, but it's a little bit of risk sharing that is part of the whole process.
Is there anything besides Chicago you're going after, like was it at Savannah or Atlanta or something like that?
Well, our goal, first of all, is to allow any traveler from Ithaca to make one stop, and from that one stop get to any major market domestically or internationally. So that means Newark, a Philadelphia, a Chicago, an Atlanta. The primary focus right now, because of all the Pacific Rim traffic from here, is westbound, and that's Chicago, and that's United Airlines. We get a nice connection out of Newark if you can get there. The problem is flying into the Northeast Corridor is really tough. So I'm going to talk to them about multi-mode transportation, and we would be better served if you knew that 99% of the time you could get on a bus, go through security in Ithaca at the airport, get on a bus, and be delivered airside in Newark so you didn't have to go through security again, and you did it for half the price of flying, and it took you half an hour more, which is about the way the numbers work out, I think that would be an interesting opportunity. Otherwise, you get caught in the accordion effect of the morning flight's late, then the noon flight's twice as late, and next thing you know, you're stuck someplace overnight.
All right, that sounds great. I think, a priority to keep something in the New York City area, but we don't need
absolutely
Philadelphia.
Yep.
Leslie.
Thank you. I have the $40 million question. Mike, I think you answered that already. And thanks very much, Josh, for your wisdom so that we don't have rental cars hanging from trees. And we have an expansion. I have one simpler request. You had a beautiful community, your community airport thing up there. My simple request is I've been asking for a few years now that I really would like to see in your plans some signage that are in different languages that say welcome to the airport.
For several months when you get off the airplane and come past the security area out into the terminal, we have signs that welcome you in a dozen different languages, including obviously Mandarin and others, in an attempt to make visitors to the community feel welcome. We also spent a great deal of time last week working with a Chinese promoter who is interested in working with us to make Ithaca a gateway to the Finger Lakes and a destination for people from the Pacific Rim, principally Chinese. The Chinese travel a lot and they spend a lot of money. So we're trying to become a destination, and part of being a destination is making sure when your customers get here, they see at least some vestige that you're welcoming them in their native tongue.
And going out, coming in and going out.
Well, you can see it going out, too. It's right there in the cattle chute of the old airport. When we get it fixed, it'll be a nicer spot.
Thank you.
Mike, I just want to mention thank you for your effort and the staff to get the NASCAR teams to land at the airport this year, $1,000 every time a plane hits the runway.
Yep.
And the Tompkins County Airport, in cooperation with the Canic Air, had a car in the Xfinity race at the Glen. And his last name is Chastain. I can't remember his first name.
Ross.
And I think they, well, I know that he ended up 14th. And it was a decent run for him on a road course. So it would be great if they would all come back next year again.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, I'll leave you with one last thing, and that is we are the most reliable airport in upstate New York. We are the most reliable airport in upstate New York, and Southwest Airlines just named us as their primary alternate upstate because of that. Yeah, so we got a terrific crew out there. Josh and his folks just do a wonderful job keeping the airport open. Now, if we can get airlines that are as reliable as the airport, we'll be in great shape. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you both for coming down. Board of Elections. I'm going to move that the election inspector's salary goes from $10 to $12 an hour, because it's going to be something for me and Joe to do when we retire. Which is going to be really soon. Go ahead.
Okay, Elizabeth Cree couldn't be here tonight, so Terry Stammer, deputy, is going to stand in here and I believe start the process on the budget.
Steve, please use the mic.
Six inches away.
Okay. Say it again, or are you all set?
Can't hear you.
Yeah, go. Roll it.
Okay, Elizabeth Cree is unable to be here tonight, so Carrie Stamm is standing in for her as we give our presentation.
Our expenditures and revenues are going to go down in 2017 because we had to budget higher this year because we anticipated having as many as four elections. Next year, there would be no more than two, most likely, primary and then the general. Our major influences, next year we're going to have five village elections, assist six schools in Tompkins County with their elections. All legislative seats are up next year, several local offices throughout Tompkins County, all the towns in the city. And like I said, our expenses are going to decrease significantly from this current year due to less primaries, some more grant money coming in, and efficiencies. We've just discovered ways to do things quicker, and it doesn't take as long. Full-time equivalents, it's gone down slightly this year. Our machine technicians worked full-time. Next year, they will go down to part-time. We're asking to use some of our rollover money to replace our computers. They were purchased in January 2013, so they'd be 4 years old next year, and two of them have already failed that we had to replace this year, so I think the rest might go at any time.
Okay, and we had an over-target request that wasn't supported by the county administrator, and that was to increase the rate of inspectors and poll workers from $10 an hour to $12 an hour. We established that rate in 2006 when the county took over the operation from all of the towns. It's under state law. This rate is established by the county legislature. And at the time we set this back in 2006, we were one of the highest paying counties in the state. As far as paying their poll workers, and currently we're really down at the lower end of the list of counties when paying them, and so we put this in. We think it's time to give them an increase. They make our elections work. Without them, our elections would not go very smoothly.
And a dozen donuts cost almost $8. I'm sorry. Mike.
The legislature keeps talking, not our legislature, but the state legislature keeps talking about extended voting and having us open weeks of the election for early voting more. If, I don't know where that stands at this present time, and if that happens, do we have enough money in there for the poll workers?
Well, right now, it must be on the back burner because we haven't heard anything about it in quite a while. I don't think that the legislature and the governor have really agreed on just exactly how they're going to approach this. I think when they first started, the first couple of proposals were very unrealistic, particularly for the small counties. They are getting more reasonable. Of course, all the proposals seem to say that the counties will pay for it. So I guess when we get a solid proposal, we'll have to see if there's ways that we can make it work with the current funding and, just see if there's trade-offs from early voting. Don't know.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Anyone else? Carol, and then we'll end with you, Martha.
Wait, somebody just asked me last night how come we paid so low for our election workers. So this is the OTR. Is that for the poll workers or is that for the one that wasn't funded? Yeah.
Yeah, the $8,430 would be the increase if you had a full primary and a full general. You're going to have a full general next year no matter what, but if you happened to have a full primary, then we would need $8,430 more to if we were going to pay the inspectors $12 an hour as opposed to the $10 they're getting paid now.
Wait, are inspectors the same thing as poll workers?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha.
So, Joe, was there any philosophical reason not to approve this?
No, it was capacity. I also think that there may be an unanticipated consequence here. I don't know if, Steve, we talked about this briefly, if there's any kind of a threshold where once the inspectors make a certain amount of money, they go into the payroll system, there may be tax consequences. I'm not sure if there's, if the bottom line take-home pay is the equivalent of the $2 increase. I'm not sure about that.
Well, with the increase that we're proposing here, you would probably need four full elections for them to get into the situation where they would be earning over $600 a year, which is the figure that we were last given that they would need before the county would start having to issue 1099s, I believe it is. And I think that we haven't had four elections in a year since I've been commissioner and, next year.
Any other questions?
No, I'm not done. I thought we had four elections this year.
Potentially, but it didn't happen. We didn't have the federal primary, and the state and local primary was limited to the town of Lansing. We're very fortunate for that.
Okay, if we could kind of get clarity on that so that, we know if there's a tipping point. Can I ask, did you get, I saw an early report maybe before the presidential primary, we had new registrations this year. Was it kind of what you expected in terms of additional registrations?
I didn't hear that question.
Registrations. Did you have a lot of new registrations this year?
The colleges did a lot of drives. We were getting, I'd say probably close to 1,000 before the presidential primary. A lot of activity.
And a lot of people have been coming in getting lots of forms to go out and do drives in the final 20 days that we have right now before the deadline for this year. It doesn't generally impact the amount of inspectors we'll use, but, might have maybe one district here. But.
Okay. And our basic equipment, the optical scanners, they're now, 10 years old or something?
8 years.
8 years. Is there any concern that we're going to have to, like, buy a whole new batch anytime soon?
We're keeping our eye on it. I think at this point we've have lost one machine. We are, you know, there are getting into maintenance issues. They haven't affected us on election day, but it's something we're looking at. We do have warranties on all these machines for another 3 years or 2 years.
I think it's through 2019.
Through 2019. And we still have a little bit of money left in HAVA to contribute toward election expenses. But and I don't know how long that will last, you know, whether they'll come and get it. But right now they seem to be holding up fairly well.
All right. Thank you.
Do they pay? Do you pay in cash? No, I'm kidding. Dooley.
You are really looking forward to that job. What would $11 an hour mean for you?
Say that again.
What $11 instead of $12 an hour do for you?
What would the increase be? Probably half of that. Probably, I'm just taking a real wild guess, but I would think it would be $4,315, be one half.
Where would that put you in the range of counties in the state?
It still would be towards the bottom.
Will?
So on that point, are you having any perceived problem getting inspectors at this point? Or are people still happy to work for...
That's an ongoing problem, I think, with both the commissioners.
Yeah, I don't think it has to do with the money. A lot of times people are surprised when they find out they do get paid.
Okay.
But at the same time, it would be nice to reward them.
So in theory, you could be paying them nothing, and they would...
Some people would be happy.
Some people
they would be happy. But
we have lost a couple, or at least I would say three or four I've lost over the last couple of years because they're just saying they're not getting paid enough.
Well,
generally, they're not out there for the money, but...
Yeah, these are good people. They work hard. It's an incredibly long day.
I would
really, really like us to bump that up if we can. So,
is a bigger issue the that people can't work half days?
There is a provision in the law that would allow one of the poll workers at every election district from each party to work a split shift. One of those positions could be split. Problem you run into still is then you would have to find that many more people to even work the 8-hour days. We do use the split shift in a few occasions, but it's pretty tough staffing your election and getting them to show up at 5:30 without having to worry that the second half's going to show up at 1:30.
It works well for, like, married couples. You know, one can come in the morning, the other can come relieve them in the afternoon.
Or if people come to you as already a pair committed.
Yeah, then it works out well.
Thank you very much.
I had a question.
Go ahead.
Could you just repeat for me why you're going down one person?
Oh, it's the office has to stay with even numbers. So this year, our two technicians were full-time. They worked 35 hours a week. And next year, they're each going to only work 20 hours a week. So it's one person, but it's two people. Or it's one position, I'm sorry,
but two
people splitting it.
Thank you.
Rich.
Are legislators prohibited from serving as poll watchers?
Yes. Any elected official cannot serve as a poll worker.
Especially next year.
Anyone else? 8 more minutes, we can be 1 hour overtime.
I'm on it.
You keep talking, Jim.
We'll see you next week. Thank you all for coming. And for the staff, for you people staying on.